Tonight, Pretty Late favorite Brandon C. Price rides sidecar. Then later, our guest is creating some art that you need to see. And finally, we've got more friends from Fringe Festival after we turn on the Trump tracker. All that and more right now on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez.
Ah, Wednesday. Hi, Brandon C. Price. How are you doing tonight?
I'm wonderful, Ms. Vasquez. How are you?
I'm very well. I'm a little bit, I'm at a crossroads. I feel a little bit torn right now because we save up all of our Trump stories for Wednesday nights.
Oh, so you don't know which one to use.
No. That's not even, no, that's plenty. But no, my problem is the reason we don't do it is the oversaturation of Donald Trump, right? Mm-hmm. Is that we become like sort of just inundated with all this conversation and the things that he does. And the same thing with Hillary. We save Hillary stories for Thursday. But I heard that we played all of his speech tonight. I didn't realize that. We already earlier played all of his speech when he went to Mexico. So I'm torn over as to whether or not we talk about him more tonight. I feel as though he's gotten a sufficient amount of airtime.
But as someone who disagrees with a lot of his policies,
you know that there's a website where you can see like who you agree with, you know, like which politician.
Oh, it's like a quiz.
It's a quiz, mm-hmm. And you take all the things that are important to you. I strongly support this or I disagree with that. 3% for Donald Trump, and I think that's just that
that's
the inhale of oxygen is important.
There's a 3% margin of error on
the
test.
So 97% of what he says. But I think is disgusting.
If you disagree with him, don't you think him getting airtime is actually a positive thing? Because if you disagree with what he says and you think it's ridiculous what he's saying, the more people that hear this nonsense.
Well, it's interesting that you ask that because I kept hearing Ro Khan say that the optics are good that Donald Trump went down to Mexico.
Yeah.
And I don't know what purpose it serves to talk about it more. I mean, people know where I stand. I don't like Donald Trump. And what we're going to talk about at midnight is, you know, basically what?
Well, I think on both sides of the conversation, you always learn something by listening in. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, I mean, I could listen to this stuff all night because there's always a new tidbit, whether it's an opinion or a fact I didn't know.
Okay.
I'm always striving to be more educated.
Well, Brandon C. Price votes for continue our Trump trackers as
just
scheduled.
Love
Esmeralda,
it.
What do you think?
Sure.
She's weary. She's
I heard him like 5 minutes and I got tired.
Trump weary over here. Yeah, I mean, I'm Hillary weary too, but I just more Trump weary. So we'll talk more about that later because we do have a lot of other things to talk about. Before we welcome our guest in the studio, I know she's on her way. Really important stories about how do we, you know, deal with the violence in Chicago? What do we do? Everyone keeps saying, why isn't anyone doing anything? Why don't people in their communities, why don't they do something? Why aren't they protesting? And whenever we start saying they,
it's a lot easier for they to get it done.
Well, if you're asking, that means you're not doing anything.
Exactly. The proverbial they is always easiest to put stuff on.
What are we doing? We're talking about it, I guess. Calling attention to it, mm-hmm. keeping the conversation going. But before we move on with that, I do want to touch base with you about what you have going on at Vamp. How is everyone doing?
It's absolutely wonderful. We're headed into the fall season. I'm really excited. I actually am coming back this week from my longest hiatus away from the show in the last 2.5 years. I took the month of August off, so I'm coming back with a bang. So come out and check it out. We're really excited about the new cabaret show that's going to happen in the winter. We're going to do this whole holiday thing. We're going to do a big New Year's thing, so start making your New Year's plans with us. It's all vampchicago.com. It's whose line is it anyway? But everybody's Wayne Brady, and you get to bring your own drinks.
You should do like a deal with a hotel and like make it a big vamp slumber party.
Ooh. I got to deal with a pizza place. I got to deal with a couple of bars, but I haven't reached out to hotels yet.
Next year, maybe.
I'm stealing that idea right now.
It's all right. I don't mind. I've always had a slumber party kind of situation, although it does seem a little bit, it's sort of summer campy, sort of adult
naughtiness.
Well, I mean,
like we could just play a lock-in at the theater afterwards.
Can you do that?
Yeah, but we're the last show in the space.
We can do a lot. Well, I'm saying do a New Year's Eve lock-in.
We're at least going to go to 2 or 3, but we'll see. So it's like, you know, you don't have to go stand in a terribly crowded bar and pay $25 for a Miller Lite.
No, hang out with your friends, bring your own drinks.
Boom. And then party
yourselves.
All night. Do your thing.
Well, for the schedule and everything you have coming up, and I know your shows are on Fridays and Saturdays at 10:30. The mm-hmm. cabarets are on Fridays at...
That's actually going to be Thursdays, and that's going to be a holiday special. So we're rolling in through fall, and then we're going to hop into that as well.
Excellent. And so people can go to...
They can go to www.vampchicago.com or hop on the Instagram, Twitter at vamp_Chicago. We pretty much have I think it's the coolest Instagram in Chicago. I'm not sure, but I would go check it out for yourself and let us know.
Wow, that's a high bar.
Yeah, and you can win free tickets like all the time.
I don't know, because I really like Esmeralda's Instagram. I'm just saying.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, thanks.
You're welcome. So
well, then we're the second coolest. I'll take that. I'll take second behind Esmeralda.
Second behind Esmeralda. All right. Well, that's the bar that we've set. So people can go to vampchicago.com.
Mm-hmm.
And the theater MCL is on.
That's Sheffield and Belmont, right off the Belmont Red Line. It's just right past the Vic Theater. We're on the other side.
And right around the corner from Cheesy's.
Absolutely. There's a liquor store and Cheesy's. It's win-win.
I ran into the owner the other day and he goes, "Hey, I came into your show." I go, "I know. You brought me dessert from your dinner." He didn't bring Cheesy's. He was like, "Yeah, but I brought it to the other girl."
That's excellent.
He wasn't coming from the restaurant.
He's so proud of his product that he doesn't need to show it off.
No, he doesn't. No, not at all.
I agree.
His food stands on its own. Oh my God, that chorizo grilled cheese sandwich.
It's nonsense.
So very, very good. I enjoy it very much. So we have a great show coming up. We've got a lot to talk about. I do want to continue our conversation about Chicago, about violence, what we can do. And because we're always wondering, well, what can we do? And I think that it has to start somewhere. And the young woman we have in the green room, Rashad Dewan, will tell us what she has been up to. And you can go to my Facebook page. I've posted a video. Follow her on Facebook. She is she's on a mission, and we're excited to hear more about that. We'll tell you when we come back on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Showcase studio, and joining me is Brandon C. Price riding Sidecar tonight. And we are thrilled to welcome in studio Rashad Dewan, who I learned about on Monday, because she was covered. There was a story on CBS News Local. They were talking about, you know, what are people doing in neighborhoods? We all keep talking about there's all this violence. We're all very, you know, it's a national story. It's an international story. Well, what are you doing about it, Chicago? Rashad Dewan has stepped up, and there are a lot of people in the community who are stepping up, and she wants to bring attention to the fact that there are people who are living and loving and singing in neighborhoods we all wanted to dismiss. Rashada, how are you doing tonight?
I am so fabulous. Thank you so much for having me.
And I don't mean to say that we want to dismiss, but don't you get that feeling that the fact that there were news outlets that refused to come and cover the story because they were afraid, but they will come when there's violence.
Yes.
To cover the aftermath,
yes.
But not what happens in the in-between.
Well, you know what? This is what I feel about that. It's a very human thing. I don't want to make the producers of,
I'm teasing you. You're right.
You're
taking the high road. They go low, you go high.
Come on. That's what Auntie Michelle teaches us.
Yes.
But yeah, it was a very human reaction. And, you know, I had friends who were just like, "Ooh, you going where?" I mean, I'm in neighborhoods and they're like, "You going to what neighborhood next?" Ooh, you know, so it's human. We all have those fears. It's just that you got to kind of have to come back with the human spirit too and say, try to be there. And guess what? You'd be surprised. You know, it's not really as violent as you think.
What neighborhood did you start with? And you're doing this every day for 15 days?
Every day, right. Oh, I have 3 more days left. Thank you, Lord. When I started this, I really didn't. It wasn't no, like, real master plan. I really just went with my spirit. And I'm like, okay, I can do 15 days. And it's right before the school year. My daughter's going to school, so I can do all of this before I ship her off. And it was great. So I live in South Shore. And I said, I have to go. I have to start at home first.
Right.
So I did the first couple of days in South Shore. We've gone to Austin, which has the highest homicide rate in the city. We've been to Inglewood. Today we were at Humble Park. We've just been all over the city, and the love has just been amazing. But see, I knew it was there. I just wanted to get everybody else to know Chicago is beautiful.
Well, you're getting hugs. You're getting tears,
yep,
from people who feel, yep, like we're not being abandoned. Here's somebody who's coming and reaching out to us.
That's right.
Somebody who has had success. You are a talented, successful actress. You have your own company.
Thanks.
And we're so proud to have you in the studio. And I hope that we develop a relationship and have you back, you know, to talk about
anytime.
Whatever you have coming up.
Oh,
Brandon
anytime.
C. Price and I started this way. You know, it's a passion for what we do and what we want to. It's somewhat of a call for action.
Yeah.
Whether it's at an emotional level or at a civic level. But Brandon is also a musician. He is a better singer than I. I can't sing. So when I started watching some of those folks grabbing the microphone, I had my own panic attack of like, because in beautiful days you've had, by,
yes,
the way, today at least it cooled off a little too.
The sun. It's like the sun always finds us. It would be like a big cloud, and then it'll be like a little shimmer of rain, and then it'll just wipe on pass.
And what did you do? So the first day you go out there into your neighborhood in South Shore, and you just set up a microphone and a music stand and to start belting it out.
An amp, and I have friends who, Black Ensemble gave me, a little music stand, and I got another stand from my friend Maurice, who's a member at Apostolic Church of God. He came out and saw, oh, you need that? Then my amp went out, and he let me borrow one of his. It was like everyone just came together. And this is the one thing I want to say. Every neighborhood, there is always one person that holds that block down that's like, you need me to help you every time.
Really?
So now I don't even say anything. I just wait. And then they always come and go, can I help you with something? And you want me to set up? And they'll warn me, you okay? Now, ain't nobody going to mess with you because I'm here with you, all right? You going to sing?
Oh, really? Sing
every single time. It's always love from the beginning.
That's what you're trying to establish.
Yes.
Is that there is love.
Yes.
That we're not to be used as a political ping pong.
No. If you're authentic to the hood will be authentic to you. And that's the thing. I don't like to broadcast publicly every place that I'm going either.
Okay.
Because there are a lot of people, especially on Facebook, where I'm really vocal about this. People know I can sing. So they're like,
yes, you can.
Where's you going next? Or, oh, I want to go and do that. And I'm like, you know what? I want this to be for the people in that community. So I'll let you know the day before, and then maybe if you can, real quick, come through. But this is a surprise for those residents.
Right.
And I tell them, I don't want anything from you but your love. And if you do donate, it goes to NAMI, just National Alliance on Mental Illness. And I really care about that.
What got you involved in NAMI?
There's a friend of mine named Kelvin Roston who is doing Jackie Wilson right now at Black Ensemble Theater. He did a Donny Hathaway story, and that he had partnership with NAMI for that. And that's how I found out about NAMI. But I'm a psych major. I went to Florida A&M University. So I really, really, really am passionate about mental health. And NAMI just has a plethora of information online about everything from basic. If you're stressed, if you have a friend who's going through a mental illness, what do you do? It's those types of basic things so we can end the stigma of mental illness. Because really, at the root of violence, it's usually some type of hurt. It's usually some type of anger. And people just feel misunderstood. So if you get a handle on what do I do if I'm really kind of starting to have a mental breakdown, well, you can get help. And it's not bad. You're not crazy. Everybody has those moments, you know?
And do you think, because my husband and I have been talking about this, that it is that the go-to is violence,
mm-hmm.
the problem solving, the, getting into an altercation that mm-hmm. escalates, that the resolution now becomes so much, quicker to reach for a gun.
Mm, retaliate, yeah.
To retaliate.
Well, yeah. That's because people are angry.
Yeah.
They're angry about a lot of stuff. And what happens with mental illness is Psych 101, the layers of anger. The root of it is sadness. And so if you've been deprived and deprived and deprived from your family and from your friends and then from your neighborhood and then from your alderman and then from the government, it's just like from the schools, from your mentors, from the person who owned the store on the corner. Everybody, it just seems to come down on you. Well, eventually you're going to implode and usually explode. And that's what's happening.
And it can become contagious too, and generational.
Sure.
Because this is something that's happened, I think, historically in neighborhoods where the city has isolated entire communities
mm-hmm.
and strangled them when it comes to economic growth and
yes.
education.
Yes.
So when people say, why don't they do something about it? And Brandon and I were talking about that and saying, why aren't those communities out there saying something? But they are. And we just talked about how the media doesn't cover that because
yeah.
it isn't the story.
That's right. And it's not, it's not sensationalized like that.
Right.
It doesn't get people like, ooh, a knee jerk reaction. And that's, I get it. News has now unfortunately become entertainment.
Right.
And so it's funny because I tell my friends, if you want to see me on the media, well, ask them. Tell them, hey, our good friend Harmony.
Yes.
She
was able to tag me.
The one, and other friends, they've tagged their. If you ask or tell these producers what you want, they'll give it to you. But if you only talk through views, then they're going to go with that. And I can't blame them.
Right.
That's the business.
Right.
It.
The clicks. It's all clickbait.
That's right.
But
yes.
don't you get a great. I completely agree. And it's
yeah.
a darn shame. And you'd love to see a news outlet or one of these 24-hour cycles or one of those things pop up with good, like this honor quest of information and news, because you like you feel good when you see good things.
You do.
I just don't think they're willing to risk the dip in ratings that I believe would be temporary. Because if you, I mean, like right now, I'm just like, oh, this is so cool. And NAMI is not only so great at supporting people with mental illness, but their family and friends classes and programs are so incredible. And so many of those coping skills have to come from the world around you too. And for and to tie that in, to tie this like educational thing with mental illness and use it in this fun and inventive way that you're doing, like I can't imagine that other people wouldn't. I mean, you're talking about finding the good in people, and I can't imagine other people wouldn't like chill bump and with like with happiness. And it just makes me so mad, because I do believe that most of the news cycles just won't take the risk, because they know the violence will get the ratings.
I am happy to announce that my little segment on CBS, the first people to come out and you know take the story, is the second highest rated social media.
Oh, that's wonderful. So, and where can people find? I know I posted it on my Facebook page. Where else can people
post? Can go to CBS.
CBS.com.
Chicago.
CBS Chicago. Mm-hmm. And it was great, too. And I know that she also, the reporter, did some Facebook Live video
she
as well.
She did 20 minutes of it, just sitting out there. Same thing. ABC came today. I mean, it's happening.
Yes.
You just have to see. But if I wasn't willing to take the risk of doing something that could be seen as quite radical, what would they have to show?
Right.
So, I mean, let me take that back, because Chicago residents are doing something. So maybe it's just more of us getting out there and doing using the social media platform or.
Right. Take the first step.
Yeah.
I think what I would love to see, and what I think like a lot of people just stop at that exact phrase, like, well, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I can post about it. I can throw up a like and I can tell my friend, but I've never, you know what I mean? I've not experienced that. And I'm not an activist with my entire life. I just wish we as a population could come up with actionable steps, because like if you give me a concept, I'm like, that's great, but now I have to do so much critical thinking to solve it in any, like not just specifically this, but in anything.
Yeah.
And obviously that list is not easy, or I think someone would come up with it, like these are the things we can do. But to see those things, I mean, again, like tie it back to NAMI, like you get these actionable steps, like here's, you know, you realize, you talk, you communicate, you start to develop coping skills. And that is the way you break down things for people. And I think I wish we could give that to the entire world, whether they are in those neighborhoods or up here on the other side or wherever they are.
Yeah.
And so we could all take action together.
I mean, NAMI has it on their website. They have all of their pamphlets on their website, these step-by-step things you can do if you're having a mental breakdown right then.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they have pamphlets for the African-American community, the white community. Like, they literally have done the work.
For sure.
So it's really up to us to kind of go out there and try to utilize what's out there for us to use. But we got to know. Awareness is the first step, I think, to any process of change.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So the more we do this stuff, the more people really will start to be like, what's going on?
Right. And well, how can I participate?
Yeah.
And how, I mean, the kind of reaction that I saw on the CBS logo has to have been happening over and over again in the neighborhoods you've gone to, the hugs, the tears.
The tears. I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready for, where were we? We were on 63rd and Kedzie. And literally when I sang the first song, this woman got off the bus and just stopped and saw me and listened and just started bawling. And I was like, oh, man. And then she went underneath her breath to say, you know, sometimes it's just so much. My family puts so much on me and I'm trying. And you just go through the day. We all go through that, carrying stuff and not having any place to really let it out. And that's what she felt. So I was glad that I was there. And then another person that same day, you know, did it as well. One Hispanic woman came and just sat her children on the sidewalk, like for 20 minutes. And just, I was like, see, this is another thing that's blowing my mind, is that as much as we're talking about different cultures of right now in this time, this has been universal. I mean, it's transcended cultural boundaries. It's touched, I mean, from Hispanic, you know the diverse population we have in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
It's touched everybody. And that's really been great. Even if you don't speak much English, they'll come by and just stand there.
Oh, music is music.
Yeah.
It touches your heart. We are talking to Rashada Dewan, who has taken Karaoke for Peace to neighborhoods throughout the Chicago area. She is on her 12th day.
Yes.
13th, 14th, and 15th. 15th on Saturday.
Yes.
Karaoke for Peace. You can go hashtag Karaoke for Peace on Twitter, on Facebook. Follow her adventures. We're going to talk to her a little bit more. She'll stay with us.
Absolutely.
After the news. And Brandon C. Price joined us as well. And we've been talking about NAMI. That's NAMI. www.mentalillness.org for more information. The National Alliance on Mental Illness. Find out what the warning signs are. Find out if you need help or if there's someone in your life that can use some help. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. I'm joined by Brandon C. Price, and we have welcomed my new favorite person in the world tonight, Rashada Dewan. Rashada Dewan has been bringing karaoke for peace to the neighborhoods of Chicago, hardest hit by violence. And I asked her if she would sing for us, and she will, because I want you to know what beautiful voice she is bringing to the men and women, the kids who really need some beauty in their lives. The best thing that's ever happened to me, here is Rashada Dewan.
I've had my share of life's ups and downs, but fate's been kind. The downs have been few. I guess you could say that I've been lucky. I guess you could say that it's all because of you. If anyone should ever write my life story, for whatever reason, oh, there might be, you'll be there between each line of pain and glory, 'cause you're the best thing that's ever happened to me. You're the best thing that's ever happened to me.
By the way, people really stop in groups like that. Look, there are people applauding on the street. Thank that's Rashada Dewan, and she is bringing her music and inviting others to share their music. That's really the thing that you're doing, too. I mean, you brought those people to a stop. I mean, and I don't even know where there weren't even people on Michigan Avenue. I don't know where they came from. They like came up the stairs. All they the came out of buildings.
Hear us. Yeah, so I just thought they came up and like she is emoting so hard right now, and they're just watching this brilliant silent movie.
Yes.
And,
yes, she was breaking through that glass with this amazing voice. You grew up in South Shore, or where'd you grow up?
I grew up on 79th and State. Went to grammar school at Ruggles and then Beasley Academic Center. Mm-hmm. Went on to Curie High School.
And Beasley Academic Center, was that more like an options program? Is it when you say academic center?
Beasley Academic Center at the time was a magnet program.
Okay.
And I think they're still a magnet school right on State Street.
So. And then you went to Curie, mm-hmm. which I think I saw in your bio was at the time sort of a performing arts school.
Yes, it was.
And what is it now? Is it more vocational?
Yeah, it's
in transition. The city's always getting their fingers in there.
They put a new name on it now. And, I mean, we really had very strong music programs at Curie. We had very strong drama programs. I mean, it was known for performing arts. That's why I went.
And you started out as a singer, but then became drawn to performing as an actress as well?
I did. Here's how that happened. So in high school at Curie, I was in advanced girls chorus, and I'll never forget there was the Curie Gospel Choir. They were restarting and they had auditions. And a slew of us, we were just all gung-ho for gospel choir. And my advanced girls chorus teacher, Miss Butler, bless her.
She said,
if any of my students are in gospel choir, I'm going to fail you. And we were like,
what?
Why? Well, because the style of singing is so different. So she was like, you all are too young to know how to change your voice, your technique to support what we're doing here versus what you're doing there. So classical has more of a upper mask register versus gospel is very bottom heavy and chest. Mm-hmm. So of course, as an adult now I can manipulate that. But as a child, you know, she was just not for it. And all of us, I said, oh, if you're going to fail me, I'm changing majors. How about that? And so I changed majors and into like dance and drama.
Oh, and how did you like the change?
It was absolutely amazing. Then I did Dreamgirls in high school, and I was Dina, and that just started me on a whole nother different path. So Florida A&M, I majored in psychology, and I minored in theater to make my parents happy.
Right? I mean, that's the thing. Which one was to make your parents happy, the theater or psychology?
Yeah. The psychology.
I was going to say.
Oh, yeah. So you got to think of major, probably.
Yeah. We had to do a split, like, desire here. Like, okay, you know what? I will major in something that can get me a job. and then I'll minor in something that I just really love.
But they also lend a lot to each other as well.
Yeah, you combined them.
Yes. I had no clue at all until here I am in front of like a 1,000-seat theater doing The Lion King, and I could just feel how to shift the character with the different audiences from state to state. And I was like, oh. Yeah, this is good. I can feel that.
Right. So, you have that sort of, you have that arsenal and that information at, at your fingertips. Well, that you're, you know, in your core to be able to just vacillate between all
that.
That
was not the plan.
And why Florida? Well, Florida A&M?
Let's see. Yes, I was definitely the kid who wanted to get as far away from home as I possibly could. And Florida was that for me. And also Florida A&M said, listen, your ACT, I think that's the test you take.
Yeah.
Your scores are a little below what we accept, but we'll take you in the summertime, and then you can just go. And I said, okay.
Okay, let's do that. Yeah. Plus, you didn't have snow for 4 years.
Oh, yeah, but then it was horrible rain weather, you know.
Florida's its own terrible
weather. Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Plus Florida.
Absolutely. It's like the newscaster's like, and then there's Florida.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a reason that's where alligators live.
Yo, seriously, it's like it's two temperatures every day. You definitely have to plan for it. So.
I feel like they want to talk to us, but I can't. Hold on a second. Let me see if I can. The women of this is security. Can we hear? Ladies, did you want to say something? Hello, we can hear you.
We can hear you.
Hi, were you waving hi? Oh, are you training somebody? Hi, how's it going?
They're a new person.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
So when you, what brought you back to Chicago? Did you always know you were going to come back to Chicago after college?
Yeah, I did. I didn't quite know what I wanted to do once I graduated. And so my dad was like, well, we'll give you about a year to figure it out. And then I became a social worker or case manager at Community Mental Health Council. Oh, it's no longer with us, but it was one of the best training grounds I could have ever been in.
Well, and you're getting in there and dealing with families one-on-one at a
level.
Were you prepared for the kind of situations that people were?
No, I didn't know anything about transference and counter-transference and how you could be helping someone through a situation, and then once they leave, you now have
residual
those same feelings. Oh my gosh, had no idea until it really happened to me. And thank goodness, though, it was like a comprehensive wholeness program. So you had the case managers, then you had the therapist, and then you had the psychiatrist. And so we were all kind of there for each other on a team. And that's how I really started. You know, this is funny. You don't really know how your steps are really ordered as you're moving through life.
Mm-hmm.
But the more I grow and learn and live, it's like all these things seem to be so connected. Because now here I am doing this Karaoke for Peace project, and it's so tied to wellness and psychology and therapy. And I'm like, this is so cool. I didn't know. And I'm an actress. So I just didn't know any of this stuff until
we're all making it up as we go.
Yeah. I think the best way to make God laugh is to make a plan.
Oh, yes. Yes. It's like, oh, look at you. You're cute.
Yeah. Let me show you what I had in mind.
So you came back to Chicago and took on a position as a social worker, and at the same time kept open the door and the possibility of pursuing acting and singing.
That's right. I had my first professional theater job at ETA, Creative Arts Foundation, on the south side of Chicago in the children's show. And then from there, my friends said, hey, let's go to Black Ensemble. And so I went to Black Ensemble, and then it's like the rest was just history. So I'm thankful for Jackie Taylor. I'm thankful for Renako Jahi. I mean, these are just theater legends here that mentor me, and I'm so grateful for them.
Well, off the air, I'll ask you if you ever worked with Sherilyn Bruce, but not on the air.
Okay.
I've talked openly about Sherilyn Bruce, but that's okay.
All I know is good things. Yeah. Let me say that.
Then never mind. She was an instructor at UIC. She's incredibly talented.
Yes, didn't she?
And she knows it, huh?
Didn't she play Hillary Clinton at Victory Gardens?
Oh, she may have. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't follow her career after the emotional scarring.
Oh no!
But
which we're clearly going to talk about off air.
No, it's she knows. There's letters to the university already, so they're still on file.
Still bones in the hallway.
But huh? I let things go. I'm very good about
I see.
No residual,
absolutely
no transference.
Oh, no,
no, no, no.
Mm-hmm.
I've worked through all that. I probably should go to NAMI.org.
There's a pamphlet for that.
Micro and macro aggressions, is that on there?
Gosh.
Complete denial, and you.
Yes.
We are talking to Rashada Dewan, who has taken her beautiful voice and talent and passion for people, I think is really what we're talking about, wanting those individuals who are hardest hit by violence to know that they're not forgotten, that they are loved. And we're going to talk to her more about that. I want to find out what started this, really, if there was a catalyst. More after this on 720 WGN. That was a tease. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. I'm joined by Rashada Dewan, who is taking music to the streets, karaoke for peace, and neighborhood's hardest hit by violence. You know, nationally, internationally, people talk about, well, Donald Trump's giving speeches about how, you know, he could fix it. By the way, Rashada, what did you think of that when he said he could fix the, he had talked to a police officer who had a solution. And so they're just going to keep it a secret, apparently. Oh,
you know, it's important for me throughout this process to only take in good stuff.
Yes. Okay. So only good things. Congratulations on your Jeff nomination.
Hey.
Congratulations.
Yay, thank you.
You just found out today?
I did.
Congratulations.
Well, last night.
Last night.
Yeah, last night.
Very cool. And what was the performance?
For Dynamite Divas at Black Ensemble for Gladys Knight.
Oh, there it is.
There it is.
Very cool.
Yay.
When are the awards? We want to know. We want to know the results. We okay. know that you're going to win.
Now listen, this is what I will say, because they have three of the four women nominated, and then all of the dope people at Second City for this show called A Red Line Runs Through It, which mm-hmm. I saw, and Lisa Beasley is amazing. But Sherry Addison, I am going to shout you out, girl, but she was Aretha Franklin. And I mean, shut the house down every single night. So I got to say that if I don't win, I won't be upset, because I know Sherry Addison deserves that thing. Man, I'm going to say it.
It's Sherry mm-hmm. and Rashada, Aretha and Gladys.
For real. I'll take that. I'll take it.
I think even Gladys would take that.
Yes. Look, if Gladys heard Sherry, she'd say, okay.
All right. Yeah, that's all good. What inspired you to take to the streets and bring music and love and kindness to neighborhoods that are the most distraught?
Well, I will say that the Baton Rouge and Dallas incidents, you know, I really don't watch the news a lot. And when news finds me, it really finds me. I mean, because it has to be impactful to the world if it finds me, because I don't look for it. And I remember seeing so much about it. And then when I saw the guy and police officers, and I went to sleep and I had a nightmare that something was happening. And I woke up and said, okay, this is ridiculous. And it's gotten to the point where I feel so helpless, so hopeless as a citizen of this nation. And I was like, I'm tired of this. I'm tired of there. It can't be okay for me to now hear of someone being killed without justice by a police officer. And I'm like, I don't even want to hear about it. That can't be okay. So I decided, what can I do? And I prayed, God, what can I do with my gifts to specifically do something about my home? I recently did Aida at the Muni in St. Louis, and I was getting my hair braided for the show, and on the news was another violent crime about Chicago. And the woman braiding my hair was like, oh, it's so bad there. And I just teared up, because I was like, that's my home,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I was like, I'm going to do something about it. So I'm going to take it to the people exactly where they are, because I know that I make people feel good with my voice, and they need to feel good.
And you have touched people. And I know tonight, I hope that people can open their hearts and their minds to, you know, what can they do too? What's calling you? And it can't be okay, whether it's this or something else going on. When you were talking about, you know, people react with violence because they're angry, but there are people who are reacting toward other things because they're angry. They're drawn to things because they're angry. And sometimes we do have to say, well, what can I do? What am I doing to alleviate that? Whether it's seeking help or doing something to make my life better, to make the lives of those around me better.
Absolutely.
Or just even easier. It doesn't have to be better, you know, and not make. Maybe it sounds like, you know, what can I do to help?
Yes. And I think it takes even a moment of honesty with self.
Mm-hmm.
First, I had to go, okay, what do I believe? Do I know what my gifts are? That you'll be surprised that that one question alone is really scary to a lot of people, because we are used to running this kind of like rat race of just being in our everyday and just getting by. Can we pay our bills? Can we just do the little amenities that we like? And we're just finding ourselves on routine, and we haven't really tapped into, we might be so far away from what we're really purposed to do that we don't pay attention that we're not doing it until we realize we're just not happy. Mm-hmm. And then you end up quitting, and then you're scared, and now you're like, what do I do? Well, you can always stop and go, what do I love? I used to ask people when I worked at that mental health council, I would say, what would you do for free? Whatever you would do for free, that is really your purpose. Now, I'm not saying, you know, go not have a job.
Right.
But tap into that and do more of it. If you like to paint, if you really just love doing taxes, there's some people that really love that, know. You know. But I'm like, if you really love that, man, go teach some kids how to do this real quick. Because somebody taught me in high school, I don't do my own taxes, but, you know, bless my mm-hmm. teacher who taught us. And it's just that. If you can get into what would you do for free and do that over and over and over again, get really good and confident at it, you'd be surprised at what kind of ideas would come to you that you can give out.
And you also mentioned that you don't watch the news. I think there is something to the idea, maybe not the news, but the shutting down one thing that's causing extra clutter in your day, something that detracts you from doing what you're talking about, from going out and teaching someone or doing something that you love. You know, is there 5 minutes that you're taking out on Facebook or, you know, watching television that you can do something else?
Sure.
Start with 5 minutes. Go to 10 minutes.
Yeah, take a minute. I mean, listen, we all want to go to the gym. You know, we all want to just go and get pretty and all of that. But it's like, all right, that same time that you invest into your body to exercise and to get a center, take also some time to just breathe and go, am I happy with this? What can I be doing outside of just the physical to get well,
right.
You know, and then share it. If you do that, I'm telling you, my vision is, you know, at the end of these karaoke for peace circles, on the corners, we do prayer circles at the end with the residents, and everybody circles up. And the idea is, man, every time we do this, the circle gets bigger and bigger.
Of course.
What if it just got big enough to like encompass this entire city? What if it did that?
Right.
You know, who knows? And I'm like, I know it may sound preposterous. I know that. But it's not above me. I feel like anything can happen through Christ. And that's just me personally. If you don't, you can believe in whatever you want to believe in. It's no judgment. I don't believe in none of that. But if it makes you feel good and happy, because this is another part I don't get. I mean, I know we're in a climate right now of politics where people are liking different things. And it's funny how anger makes some people feel good. I don't know what that's about. But if it's anger that you're really feeling like, yeah, I like to speak out and call people names because I want some type of retribution, or I want to speak out because no one wants to tell the truth. It's like, but does that make other people feel good? If it doesn't make other people feel good, mm-hmm. is it really good?
At what cost?
Yeah. If it makes me feel violent towards you, then maybe you should ask, is that the best thing? Or let's, because somebody said on one of the ABC feeds or CBS feeds, it's going to take more than that. And I said,
yeah,
it is.
It is.
It is. So we start right here. What else can I do?
Yes.
What else can you do?
Yes.
And there you go.
It's going to take more than that. Okay, so I guess I don't do this.
Well, if it's hard, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
And it's crazy that emotions like that, fear and anger and those initial responses, they become conditioning. And the more they happen, the more your body is physically addicted to that feeling. There's like this subconscious return of investment for feeling that way. And it just perpetuates and gets harder and harder to get out of that cycle. It's heroin, it's alcohol, it's cigarettes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's just the same way. And I think absolutely, you force a human connection, you force a musical note into somebody's face, like, what an because you have to kill with kindness. You cannot come in that way. You cannot come in defensive or angry, or you are, again, you just add into the cycle.
Mm-hmm.
So if you just smack anger in the face with a little, like with, like I said, like song and literally human connection, there's a reason baseball teams high five every single play.
Mm.
Because human connection physically is proven to elevate, to raise the mood, to connect with your people around you. That's real, why you see it in sports all the time.
I never even thought about that.
They all touch every time. And there's science behind it. And you're talking about a prayer circle circling up. It doesn't matter if everybody in that circle believes something different.
Yep.
That physical connection, that human connection, we can all believe in. We can all feel in the same way.
Absolutely.
What do you, go high five. Do you want to high five each other?
Hey.
There it is.
Yeah.
Oh, that felt good for me, even.
I was waving at that guy, just so you know. That wasn't a really awkward attempt at a high five. And I'm glad we did. I feel better about
it. I forced it. I forced the high five.
I feel better about it.
I just want you to know.
We'll do a hug afterwards.
I'm very cool.
Now, in basketball, it's smack you on your booty. Yeah. I don't know if I want to do that part.
Good game.
What do you want people to know about the neighborhoods that you're visiting, that you're bringing Karaoke for Peace? What do you want them to know?
I want them to know that there's love there. I know that the violence is real. I get that. I get it. And I'm sure that the people who do it have in their own minds, they have a reason. Okay. Whether it's protection, whether it's retaliation, whether it's whatever. But there is love there. There really is a peace there with those people. And the truth of the matter is, we all want the same things. I'm from the South Side. I went to the West Side twice. And they all were like, you from the South Side? Well, you know, Chicago, especially in the African-American community, we have a thing that's like, we on the South Side, but she on the South Side. You on the West Side, she on the West Side. And I'm like, every time I go over there, it's so beautiful. The people have so much personality. They have so much love and support. They always want to be around. And I'm like, man, I've been staying on my side for what all this time?
Right.
So it's like, I want people to know, it's love all around, North Side, West Side, South Side, East Side. We're really all one if we just come together.
This is your town. This is your city. These are your neighbors.
These are our family. I call everybody aunt, uncle, cousin, sister, brother. Mm-hmm. We're all together.
Rashada, where can people get more information about the work that you do and your performances?
Hashtag Karaoke for Peace on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, or www.rashadadawan.com. That's RashadaDawan.
And we look forward to having you back. We have to do a couple selfies before you go, if you
don't
mind.
Let's do it.
And yeah, let's have you back very soon and continue the conversation. And also, we've been talking about NAMI, NAMI.org, for more information about mental illness and what you need to do to find out about the warning signs to help yourself and others. Thank you, Rashada.
God bless y'all.
You're listening pretty late. It's that time of the week. It's Wednesday night. We do not talk about, to our best of our abilities, we do not talk about Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. Although I guess that means we should talk about Johnson, presidential candidate, the Libertarian.
Someone should.
So I watched him on Samantha Bee. I had no idea. Anyway, that's not who we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about Donald Trump.
He gets Tuesday.
He gets, maybe he'll get something in between. But he's kind of a goofball.
Most people that go, your Ross Perot's and your Nader's, they don't come like real mainstream when they go that route. And it's not that I don't support it. You just generally goofball, I feel like, would, for the last 20 years, describe that group.
Well, he'll say things like, again, we shouldn't go there, but he wants to get rid of the Department of Education. I was like, okay. And the IRS, which is right. So it goes back and forth. But tonight we are talking about Donald Trump. I know that we got some messages from listeners about our coverage and carrying the speech tonight. We also carried the speech from Mexico during Ro Khan's show. By the way, did you watch the translator for the President Nieto's speech? She was hard to listen to because usually a translator gets the speech ahead of time so that it's a little more seamless. It did not sound.
Oh, I read articles. I don't like videos online.
Okay.
Too much sensory input. Just give me the news.
Craig, do we have which one of these is from his, should we do some of his speech today or what's led up to today?
So almost all of the things that I sent you are the speech from today, but I do have another clip from a couple days ago. He said something about the Democratic Party being the party of slavery.
Oh.
Yeah, if you want to hear that first.
Let's start with that one.
Okay.
It is the Democratic Party that is the party of slavery, the party of Jim Crow, and the party of opposition. By the way, is there any place better to be than a Trump rally, right?
That it's a party of, I guess he's talking about post-Civil War and Jim Crow laws and 40 acres and a mule.
The parties have shifted so much, but you know, between now and then, when the Republican Party started, it wasn't tied to any social issue. It was small government, big defense, go do what you want. I don't care who you marry or what you do with your house or your lawn, because the point of the Republican Party is to make sure you can do it. Make sure the government does not oversee this. And you see how in the last however many years that's gotten, since Goldwater or at least Reagan, has just gotten completely tied now to social issues. And I think I think parties evolve. You know what I mean? We're not sitting on the Whig Party anymore.
But I mean, that would be like saying the South is the region of slavery. I mean, because most of the rest of the country was not.
The rest of the country's economy relied on slavery just as much.
Oh, no doubt about it. Yeah, and underpaid, you know, wage workers and industrial, you know, without any rights.
I think history in this country yeah. is the people of slavery. And you know what I mean? Like that happened and you can't separate it by party because those parties aren't what we're dealing with anymore today. And you know what I mean? Like you can't pin a mistake or like just something so horrible, something so awful on half of the people that wasn't even a group when it happened. You know what I mean? I mean, that's just, you know what? Well, we played the clip, though. Yeah. That's why he said it. So we'd play the clip. And now
this is where I'm at. Again, I was torn earlier, like talking about it. So what is the goal of invoking a sentiment like that? That the Democratic Party is the party of slavery, of Jim Crow, of marginalizing people?
Because when, no one's. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, if that were the case, why aren't more people of color drawn to the Republican Party? Is he saying that we're all just so blind to it that we don't see that it's happening? And
I mean, I think there's a thousand reasons to that question. But there's no convincing anyone of the other side anymore. Now it's so polarized that you are not going to tell a Republican and anything or a Democrat anything and have them change their minds at this point. So all you can do is like invigorate and light a flame under the people that already
yes.
like you, so they won't just vote for you. They'll talk to other people about voting for you because now it's a numbers game. And history has proven when numbers really show up across the populations, mm-hmm. across the demographics, Democrats win.
Right.
I'm not taking a side. That's just how it is. So they have to play the numbers game. So every time Trump says something so enraging to certain people, other people are like, damn straight, it's about time. And I can do that accent. I'm from there. You know,
let's turn to the judges. Judges, do we allow? Yes, we'll accept that as
you're
an answer.
Damn straight.
Right, because you're from Alabama and Texas, oddly enough.
Run the gamut.
Well, but if it is to fire up the base and to about a numbers game, but if you're saying that the more people that vote, usually Democrats then win, then they actually would want less voters.
Well, he wants more of his voters. He's got to push his numbers up.
Right.
And they're going to cash in on the fact that Democrats were very torn this year. Mm-hmm. No one was super torn in the Republican primary, which was, I mean, they just threw a bunch of crap at the wall and just unfortunately something stuck that they weren't ready for. Whether you like Trump or not, we can all agree that the RNC was not prepared for this.
They were laughing about it. I was watching clips today. They were laughing last summer.
And now we're divided. And now, like, the Democratic side is divided because you had so many people in the Bernie camp. So many people that are like, again, it's both sides. It's the revolution. It's the whole new, I'm done with politics. I'm done with being lied to. And Trump, for all his faults and good things and whatever, embodies that almost as much, if not more so, than Bernie did. Because he's not a politician at all.
Right.
At least I can, you know, I don't know I can't trust him yet is kind of the thing.
Right.
And so you've got this, if the Republicans get people to vote and they fire people up, they could win. Because even Hillary voters now are like, well, I'll vote for her. I'm not going to campaign for her because I was kind of a Bernie guy. But, you know, and so you have... It's a real thing that could really happen, and I believe truly that's why he says such ridiculous things
and caustic things right out of the gate when he said, and that's why this is so interesting today that he went to Mexico. Obviously, the day he launched his campaign, he said that Mexico sends over people with a lot of problems. They send over their drug dealers, their rapists, mm-hmm. right? And then now you go to today where he goes to Mexico. I mean, and he yells about immigrants and building this wall, and they're going to pay for it. And I wasn't sure what to expect. Because the president of Mexico has really bad approval ratings.
23%. Lowest than any contemporary Mexican president.
Yes. And by the way, the politics in Mexico, the landscape of what it is to try to live a life in Mexico, whether it's the drug wars, violence, and politically, there's been corruption throughout the history of the Mexican
government.
Yeah. I mean, like, I mean, my mother, I talk to a lot of people who've come from Mexico. My mom always says, you know, we just figured just vote for the one, the crook you know the best. And that becomes a cynical way of living in a country where you just know it's all BS. Mm-hmm. And we've come to that place, right?
Absolutely.
Where we go with the firebrand. So he said last year, these caustic things, has said for an entire year that he's going to build a wall and make Mexico pay for it. So can I hear some of the things that he said during his speech? Let's see how fired up he was in attacking Mexico.
You want to go to Mexico first, or do you want to hear about his ideological certificates that he wants everyone to get?
Ideological what? Certificates?
Yeah, here. There's a quick clip about this.
An ideological certification to make sure that those we are admitting to our country share our values and love our people.
When is this from?
That was tonight. He said that tonight.
So after Mexico.
Yeah, this was I think, in response to any sort of refugees that we're going to not allow into the country. We need to get people certified ideologically.
Man, big old sign on the Statue of Liberty that says, maybe.
we'll see if take this quiz.
Have you learned? I mean, and that's always been like Ellis Island. They had that, like, do you know, even today, I think the citizenship is like, do you know the pledge? A lot of people to pass that citizenship test know way more than the average American. But that is not what you believe. It's what you know about where you're living.
Right.
You know, that's very, what's the capital of Texas? And hey, aren't you like a big fan of a wall across Mexico? Those are two very different things. And now we're objective. Who sets the criteria for
this ideological
test? It's standardized testing. We know that doesn't work in schools. So, like,
well, I'm guessing Christian is at the top of the list. I'm guessing that's going to be at the top of the list of the questionnaire.
Oh my gosh.
Because remember when Jeb Bush, he said, you know, we'll let the Christian refugees in. And well, how do you know if they're Christian? Well, you can tell.
They usually have necklaces. Said. Look for the necklaces.
Look for the shiny necklaces. Okay, let's listen to more of our Donald Trump clips when we come back. It's Trump Trackers. It's Wednesday night. This is the only time of the week that we talk about Donald Trump, at least in depth. We might say Trump in passing, but this is our... By the way, join the conversation. 312-981-7200. Agree or disagree, we love to hear from you more after this. Again, call 312-981-7200, or you can text us, and Craig will get those to us so we can see what you have to say as well. You're listening pretty late, and we are talking Trump Trackers. It's once a week we devote just a half an hour at midnight to talking about Donald Trump. On Thursdays we do Hillary's Hurlers, and we have a phone call. We were talking about the immigration speech, about the need for Donald Trump wants an ideological certification for those wanting to enter the United States, and Jim has some thoughts on that as well. Hey, Jim, how are you doing?
All right, how are you?
Very well, thank you. What do you want to tell us?
Well, I was just listening to your comments regarding Trump, and it's obvious you're not fans of Trump. But
I am not.
You know, no, I can tell. You know, and regarding Mexico, it's funny that really all he wants to do is enforce the laws that are already on the books. I mean, if you think only the best and brightest of Mexico are the ones sneaking over here every day, you're sadly mistaken. Those are the ones that are coming over here through the proper channels. I mean, if I were a criminal in Mexico and I wanted a fresh start somewhere, where do you think I'm going to go?
So,
I'm coming to America. They're going to welcome me. And the odd thing, too, is if I were to go to Mexico illegally without papers, I would not get harbor in a sanctuary city. I would not get any assistance from the government. I would get arrested, fined, and sent back.
Okay.
You know, why can't we do the same thing to them that they would do to us? That's probably the best rule to live by.
Well, and here's the thing about people coming to the United States from Mexico illegally through whatever channel it is, crossing the borders illegally, coming here, you know, under the guise of education or travel visas and things like that, and then deciding to stay, whether it's because they're finding a better life for themselves. So you think that everyone coming across the borders illegally are coming here to sell drugs or to rape?
No, not at all. I would probably say maybe it's a small percentage, maybe even 10 or 15%. But how many is that? How many hundreds of thousands of people is that you don't want in the country? I mean, if these people are half as good as the Democrats claim they are, they should all go through the proper channels, and we'd be glad to have them.
Or half as good as, I guess, the people themselves are claiming they are, looking for a better life. And the thing is, our economy, we were talking a little bit earlier about Jim Crow laws and slavery. Our economy actually relies quite a bit on the low wages that immigrants earn and the kinds of jobs that most of us won't do. And I know that we don't want to have those discussions either, but it does keep the wages down for the rest of the population as well. So actually having people who can have a pathway to citizenship, I think, is better, not only for the individuals who want to stay here, make a better life for their families, but for us as a country as well.
Well, you know, I'm for coming over here legally with a work permit, provided you do that and follow through on all the criteria and regulations that entails. Citizenship down the road, sure. But for the ones that have come here illegally, you know, I sympathize with that you want a better life, but I shouldn't have to pay for it. You know what I mean? Because ultimately, the Democrats love touting how these illegals contribute to the tax base. And on paper, some of them do, but when you make $15,000-$20,000 a year and you have 7 dependents, we all know how that works. By the time your deductions are figured in, not only do you not pay any taxes, you're actually getting money from us.
You want to say something, Brandon?
Well, so I think if you take these, you know, millions of people and ask them to go back or make them go back, isn't that an incredible financial burden on the taxpayer as well? Well, money that could be going to education or anything that any one of us is passionate about.
Well, see, to a point, if you actually went out and tried to round them all up and send them back, yes, it would be very expensive. But if you enforce the laws on the books by penalizing employers that hire them, by penalizing landlords that rent to them, once you take away a place to live and a place to work, we wouldn't have to deport them.
No, but they're not going to go back where they came from, where they know it's terrible. That's going to turn them to crime, because I mean, like, crime is poverty. It's uneducated people who don't have any other options, and it's either one or the other, and it's generally both, because those go hand in hand. But if you put these people in a situation where there is no legal way to provide, and they're not going back to where they came from, like you said, I mean, Mexico would absolutely jail them if they don't get killed going across the border to El Paso or Juarez or wherever. So now we have this giant, like, group that has no other way but to resort to crime. And I think cutting them off, like, I think that's a bigger problem.
Well, you know, there would be some issues, certainly, but you can't just, you know, let your country go down the toilet and then bail out and come into somebody else's. Whatever happened to staying and fixing your own country?
But
you know, we're starting to take in all these people from places. America is one of the most advanced countries on the planet. We all agree on that. And if you're having trouble making it in what really is a third world country in Mexico, if they weren't our neighbor, they would be just like Honduras. If you can't make it there, what makes you think you're going to make it here?
Go ahead.
Well, Mike, where do you draw the line? Because, I mean, the age-old argument that we've all heard, but it still rings true, is no one's here without immigrating. That is what we are as a country, and we are – so to avoid having that small 10 to 15% that you referred to over here, we're going to cut off the rights of everybody else and the opportunity of everybody else, and that's what – like, because that's what we were. That's what we stood for. That is our national ideology that we should all be behind, regardless of political view. So how do we say, well, that worked for us and it was great, but some of you suck, so sorry, everyone, forever. I mean, there's a bunch of Irish that committed crimes. There's a bunch of Italians that committed crimes. And we didn't cut off the borders on them. So I absolutely see your point. But it's hard for me to know, well, how would I draw that line when we could work together to make it better for everybody?
And to the point about, you know, earning just $15,000 to $20,000 a year, and I guess presumably Mexicans have about 7 children on the average, every single dollar then actually goes back into the economy. So as far as that goes, and you know,
they're actually notorious for not putting money into the economy. I used to work in a print shop years ago, and we had several Mexicans that worked on the forklifts and did other things around the shop. 5 of them were sharing an apartment. 90% of what they made, they sent home. And when they bought stuff, they had no furniture. There were no beds in this place. I went over there. They had a hot plate.
Jim, I'm going to stop you for a second because we're almost out of time. But when you say people are notorious and you launch into a personal story about how you watch somebody actually do something that you don't like, then it becomes not notorious, but your own point of view. We thank you so much. I need to at least get one more clip from thanks, Jim. Have a good night. Could I have another clip from Donald Trump?
Yeah, sure. Here's something about him and deportation, et cetera.
People will know that you can't just smuggle in, hunker down, and wait to be legalized. Not going to work that way. Those days are over.
Those days are over. Do we have something from the speech in Mexico? Because that was obviously from a speech in the United States.
No, all the clips are from the speech this evening.
Oh, okay.
It makes sense.
Because he sounded very, like, sort of, like, mellow and sedate when he was in Mexico. Like, I love Mexicans, and they do really good work. Oh, yeah. That was a speech in Mexico.
There is a point to stopping illegal immigration at this point. You know what I mean? Well, you can't ever – any time you sit around thinking, well, how could I change the past? You're wasting my money and time and everybody else's. So however many millions of people are here, the cost it would be to get – everybody out and find everybody. That's another drug war. That's, you know what I mean? And we saw how that went. Mm. So I feel like that is and they're already working. They're already contributing to the economy. So there's two arguments there, current and future immigration, stopping that illegal immigration, and dealing with the people that are off the books and illegal currently now. Those are two different arguments, and they get so tied in together that you really lose your message coming one way or the other, because they both have valid points if you're dealing with them separately. But you can't just dehouse 12 million people.
Ooh,
do you want to hear a little bit of his speech in Mexico when he said he had a lot of Mexican friends?
Yes.
I have.
And I happen to have a tremendous feeling for Mexican Americans, not only in terms of friendships, but in terms of the tremendous numbers
that I employ
in the United States. And they are amazing people. Amazing people.
He's not bravado. There's not.
I've many friends, so many friends, and so many friends so coming many to friends. Mexico.
He's being
and
diplomatic.
In Mexico, I'm proud to say how many people I employ. And the United States, first, second, and third generation Mexicans are just beyond reproach.
Beyond reproach. Hey, that's me. I'm beyond reproach.
Esmeralda. Does he think that, like, Mexico doesn't get the news from here? Does he just think, like, that doesn't happen? He's like, no, they didn't hear all that other stuff I said.
Well, and that was my question to people who support Donald Trump is you know, when he's, you know, caustic here and says all these things about Mexico and Mexicans and building the wall, and then he goes down and he's like, they're beyond reproach. Mexicans are beyond reproach. Does that jive with what, is that who you, is that still your guy?
Devil's advocate. Sure. People speak ignorantly. You know what I mean? And things, we're very sensitive to this now because language and in the PC world, you know what I mean? So when people say them, when people say like, oh, notorious, and they lump a group together, sometimes that's hate and sometimes that's ignorance. And while they both sound the same and affect people who are hearing them the same way, there are sometimes a difference in the meaning.
Right.
And I think sometimes we kind of lose how important that part is, because you can be a terrible communicator and still a good person that no one thinks is a good person. I'm not necessarily saying that about this situation and this person.
Well,
but I think when we get caught up into semantics like that, it's like, you know, maybe the guy just unfortunately refers to criminals by racial groups because he's playing stereotypical probabilities. Mm-hmm. And maybe he really does have a lot of friends that are from, you know, south of our border.
There you go. I do want to get to a couple of our texts. You are so right. No one will listen to what the other has to say. Not open to other views at all. And that was from the 847. And from the 630, I've never felt so ashamed for our country with today's shenanigans and immigration speech. That was so insane. It killed my brain cells a bit. Just a bit. Joe, I know that you want to say you're disappointed in the show tonight. I won't have time to get to that call. But if you listen to Donald Trump, he said that as a first generation, I'm actually first generation Mexican. I'm beyond reproach.
Beyond it.
So you can be disappointed, but I'm not reproachable. So I'm sorry, Joe, we can't get to your call. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. We are welcoming our guest from Fringe Fest. Before I move on to Fringe Fest, Brandon, I do want to let you know, I meant to fade that down. That was a little abrupt, wasn't it? A little abrupt. There's a bleh. Here, I'll say, let me just do that. Is that a little more smooth like
there
that? Joe was calling to tell us that it was the ideological certifications were in regards to Sharia law and not to Mexico. But we brushed past that, but we did acknowledge that it was about Syrian refugees. And I think I mentioned the idea of religion and whether or not. So, but we, because of the speech in Mexico, that was the news of the day. Mm. It all got kind of folded in to the broader conversation.
Yeah, no, I think he's right. It's important to keep them separate, like the issues separated, because there's so many different points on every side.
So you don't have to pass an ideological certification if you're coming from Mexico, but you do have to go back. So we have in studio with us our friends from, I can't see Kirsten. I have that big old screen in front of me. Fringe Fest, was a premiere today or is that happening tomorrow, Kirsten? Do you know?
Today was our preview party.
The preview party at the Copernicus Center.
It was.
And how did it go?
It went amazing.
Wonderful.
Was so nice to meet so many artists, and just it was a great turnout, standing room.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. I missed that. So much fun. And what brings you to our studio to promote for Fringe Fest?
I'm actually starring in Penny this year with Nico Fernandez.
Hi, Nico Fernandez.
Hey, how's it going?
Very well. Tell us a little bit about Penny.
Well, Penny is a love story inspired by the silent movie era. People like Buster Keaton, Charlie Chaplin. There's no lines in the whole thing. It's just strictly movement to a wonderful soundtrack full of Billie Holiday to Johnny Cash, and tells, you know, this incredible tale of luck and romance throughout the ages. So,
and when is your performance at Penny? When and where?
Well, our performance venue is the Gift Theater, and we actually open tomorrow, but technically tonight at 7 p.m.
Yeah, tonight.
And then over the weekend, we have a show at 8:30 and 5:30. And then on Labor Day, we got a show at 4 p.m. And then we have a couple days off. And then the next weekend, on the 9th of September, we have a 10 p.m. And the following Sunday is an 8:30.
Excellent. And how can people... Now, this is all part of Fringe Fest. Is that going through... Because Fringe Fest runs for 2 weeks through September 11th.
Yes.
Yeah.
And very excited. That's all happening up in the Jefferson Park. You can go to... I'm going to get all the information, but it's fringefest.org for ticket information. And there are venues throughout the Jefferson Park area. The Gift Theater. I know there's a community church. We'll make sure everyone has all that information. And Brian, you're also in studio with us. And what brings you to our show? What are you promoting as part of Fringe Fest?
I'm promoting the show I wrote called... I'm promoting the show I wrote called Metropolis Triptych.
Metropolis Triptych. Yeah. Wonderful. And tell us a little bit about that play.
It's sort of comics and noir meets like existential crisis. So.
Okay.
Yeah, I just.
Which happens to all of us at any time in our lives. We can have an existential crisis. I had one about a half an hour ago.
I constantly exist in that state.
Yeah, it was inspired during my first winter after I moved here from Arizona.
Oh, man.
So just tackling a lot of reasons of why.
Was it the snow that made you question your existence? You're standing there with the shovel going, why? This shovel, therefore I must. By the way, the different theaters are the, we have a lot of, Metropolis Triptych is going to be at the Congressional Church of Jefferson Park. Also, the part of that is the gym. And your performances are Friday, Saturday, September 2nd and 3rd, and Sunday the 4th, all at 10, 4, and 8:30. Everyone can go to chicagofringe.org for the entire schedule. And this is the age recommendation for yours is not so young anymore, adults, teenagers. So that means, so if they're on the cusp of being a teenager, but you think that they're worldly enough.
Yeah, you know, there's
come closer to your microphone.
Yeah,
thank
there's
you.
You know, some cursing and some
depictions of drinking on stage.
Drinking.
Is there actual drinking on stage? Because
I hope not.
Do you discourage such behavior?
It's just for after.
Just on stage, yeah.
Just for after.
Perfectly acceptable.
How about your show at Vamp?
Well, they have a show to remember. We have a show that we discover as we go, and
from
that's
thin
actually
air.
Easier drunk, I feel. but yeah, I would absolutely have to side with if there is a script. Don't drink.
And the information for all these shows is available at chicagofringe.org. And because I'm sure Fringe Fest, somebody else probably has that kind of information, but it's for chicagofringe.org. Again, Penny is at the Gift Theater.
Yes.
Now, where are you from originally, Kirsten?
I'm originally from Indiana, Fort Wayne, Indiana, but I actually met Nico. We were both at Northern Illinois University.
Okay, right here in DeKalb?
In DeKalb, correct, yeah. I just got my master's there, and he got his undergrad. And that's where Penny all began.
It all began over, like, what was the inspiration then if Penny began there? Was it watching old movies or?
Yeah, Nico found a picture, actually, a picture of Buster Keaton in, what was it, Nico? College?
College, short film.
A short film, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we actually, at part of Northern Illinois' program is we travel over to Moscow and study abroad our junior year. So while on that long flight.
Yeah,
it's
flight, amazing.
I just was jotting down some notes, and then that was like 3 years ago, and now we have this story.
That's wonderful. Now, what made you decide to study in Moscow?
It's part of the program. Their undergrad get to do it for a whole semester. Unfortunately, I only get to go for a month during the summer because our program for the master's is shorter.
Right.
You missed your
moment.
I missed my chance.
Right.
I missed it. No, but our chair or department head, Alex Gelman, he actually grew up in Russia. And so he's made that connection with the Moscow art program over there.
And what did you learn from going to Moscow and kind of, you know, absorbing the way they perform and approach a role or any theatrical endeavor?
For me, it's a lot more physical, especially more so than over in the United States, I'd say. My favorite part was the culture of theater over there.
Right.
I was just, that's what I took with me when I came back. They just look at theater in a whole new light over there. There's just a respect for it and the actors over there that is just very different than here.
Okay. Yeah, and that's the thing. There's almost a seriousness.
There is. There's this. There
like,
is this seriousness.
Like a life or deathness to it.
There
trying,
is.
Yeah, trying to ring through to mm-hmm. the truth of whatever it is, and not dwell in those moments or mm-hmm. the down lows with it. I think. Mm. Yeah.
There's a lot of yelling on stage too. Yeah. Like there's more projection. They're big.
Right. You live big on stage or go home, I guess. And yep. Nico, where are you from originally?
I'm originally from Waukesha, Wisconsin.
Okay.
And then I went to school in DeKalb and just moved here over the summer. So now this is my home base, and I'm very excited. I love the city, and
And are you both involved then with other theater groups? How are you finding the community here?
It's lovely. Yeah. I actually just came 2 weeks ago, so I'm still fresh.
Oh, really?
I'm just really fresh. But I'm actually with a talent agency here in Chicago, Shirley Hamilton Talent mm-hmm. Inc.
Well, tell Lori I said hi.
I will. But I'm
and
with
Lynn.
Them
I'm
right
sorry,
now.
Lynn. And I should Lynn, say Lynn, too.
All of the ladies at Shirley Ham. But I'm with them, and they're just treating me wonderfully. And it's just been great. It's a warm city.
Well, we do our best. I mean, you know, we're nice to you until you do something stupid in traffic.
Yeah.
And then we get really, really angry. And where are you from, Brian?
I was born in California, but then I moved to Arizona. Mm-hmm. And 3 years ago, I moved to Chicago.
And how has the transition been from, and we mentioned briefly the cold weather, but also culturally, those are significantly different areas than Chicago. I mean, Indiana and Wisconsin mm-hmm. is kind of the Midwest, but there's a different sensibility.
Yeah, I think that's sort of part of what drew me to Chicago, was just a different type of lifestyle. Mm-hmm. So
there you go. And here you are with a different lifestyle.
Yeah,
and what's your background in theater, or was there something else entirely different ahead of you?
Well, I moved to Chicago to join the theater scene here because mm-hmm. I just really enjoyed the storefront theater scene. And so, the first thing that I did in Chicago was actually volunteer for the Chicago Fringe Festival. And I've just been sort of amping up my game with them ever since.
Right. Sort of taking it all in and then to kind of getting your angle going for that.
Yeah, exactly.
And so this performance that you're doing, I'm sorry, can you pronounce it again? I want to make, 'cause I know I have it in front of me, but I don't want to get it. It's the hold on a second. I know Penny's easy to say, the Metropolis mm-hmm. Triptych.
Yep.
Yeah, sometimes you see a word and you're like, I'm not sure how to, is it titch?
Yeah. I do it a lot, so.
Do you? Where does the title for this come from?
Well, it's three short plays.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the triptych came from. And I just sort of saw it as a view of this of a city life, like condensed down to three short little plays.
Okay. And the ideas, again, I'm going to read, I'll read the synopsis, which is the plays explore Western ideas of good and evil, existence and destiny, while submerged in a world of supervillains, fortune tellers, and prisoners. See, it's hard to get it down to a synopsis sometimes, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
So this show is recommended for not so young anymore adults, teenagers, young adults, and the performances will be at the Congressional Church of Jefferson Park. Also, it's the gym. That's the sort of folded in there. And that is Friday, Saturday, and Sunday this weekend, and Monday and next Sunday, the 5th and the 11th. Everyone go to chicagofringe.org for information about the performances. And Penny is going to be at the Gift Theater the 1st through the 5th at the Gift Theater, and then also next week, the 9th through the 11th. More with our guests when we come back. We're talking Fringe Fest in Jefferson Park, Chicago Fringe. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. I'm joined by Brandon C. Price, riding sidecar tonight. We also have the wonderful, talented performers of Chicago Fringe Fest in studio with us to talk about the productions that they're doing, as well as Fringe Fest itself. By the way, the Fringe Festival is in their seventh season of 7 years. Brandon, we were talking about this. How long has Sketch Fest been going on?
16
years. Mm-hmm. I love the festivals that we have in the city. It's the opportunity to find out like all the wonderful talent that's not just here in Chicago, but all over the country.
Well, it makes you look at art you'd never look at.
Exactly.
You know, whether it's comedy, whether it's fringe, whether it's like dance festivals, there's everything. And you, as a person who, like, I listen to my music. I know my music is good, and I very rarely experience other music. And so while I enjoy what I'm listening to, I'm completely closed off. And festivals, I think that's the whole point. outside of the networking for the performers and things like that, you literally get exposed to something you would never have known you would have enjoyed or would have changed you in some way. And that's what art is. And so it's super cool.
It is. And there's so many opportunities to dabble with, different perspectives that you might not otherwise have. There's 47 groups with about 200 performances, and the shows are all, there's comedies, as Brendan said, there's dance pieces, musicals, performance art, and the unclassifiable. What would you put yours in, Brian? What would you say yours is? Is it unclassifiable?
Well, it is for me at this moment. So.
and Penny, where would you guys put your production?
We just looked at each other and gave each other a little look like we don't know either, really.
It's a little bit of romance,
a little bit of
physical theater and...
Mm-hmm. We
and
like to
clown.
Say, yeah, clown there's... vaudeville a little bit.
Oh, there you go.
Vaudeville just a little bit with like the whole reference to the silent movie era.
There you go. I love that. It incorporates a lot of different things, as Brian does as well. In his, the show is called Metropolis Triptych, and that's going to be at the Congressional Church of Christ, the gym in Jefferson Park. And Penny is at the Gift Theater. Everyone can go to ChicagoFringe.org for information about all of the performances. Again, 47 different groups, 200 different performances. And what when you decided to... be a part of this. You mentioned that you'd volunteered for the Chicago Fringe Festival several years ago, about 3 years ago. When you decided to jump in, what has the sort of preparation been like, the rehearsals and bringing this to life? Has it been a process that you've enjoyed? Has there been a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, Brian?
A little of both. Luckily, I have a lot of talented actors working on it, and a pair of great directors. So... luckily, they took some of the responsibility out of my hands, which was nice.
Right. That's always nice to be like, okay, here, I've taken my baby as far as I can.
Right, exactly. Right?
Here, do with it what you can. And how have their rehearsals been? About how long have you guys been in rehearsals for the Chicago Fringe?
We've been in rehearsals for just over a month.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
But doing 4 or 5 a week. So.
Oh, that's arduous. And look at Nico. Why? More or less.
Well, our rehearsal process. So we're remounting Penny. We performed it at NIU for our peers. So it's been a little bit easier to kind of get back into it. But part of our set has two trees.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the time we've just been rehearsing out in the park. You know, we just find two trees and people will walk by and kind of give us a weird look or a good look.
Which is fine and almost welcome sometimes.
Yeah, you know, come see our show.
Go ahead and give us a weird look.
Any advertising is good advertising.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know?
That's right. Well, speaking of which, I want to thank the Gale Street Inn for being such a great supporter of the Chicago Fringe Festival. George is a good friend of the show. And I live in Jefferson Park, so I love that this is something that's in our neighborhood. I don't have to go too far. I can walk home if I want to. You know, it's great. Do you spend much time in – you said you've only gotten here 2 weeks ago.
Gotten here 2 weeks ago. The first time I was in Jefferson Park was when we started working on Fringe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. By the way, I always ask about tech because I'm learning more. When I was at Sketchfest, I have no cues. I have I just need intro music and outro music, and that's all I ever. Lights on, lights off. I remember I was on my way there trying to figure out what's that thing where the lights kind of they flash and they chase each other. Oh, right, chasers. I need some chasers. Has the tech process been a part of what you guys have developed for Fringe Festival?
It has been. Originally, Penny, when we first staged it, it was a more interactive piece of theater.
Mm-hmm.
So to fit the piece in the space and still kind of keep that element of being interactive has been a process in and of itself during rehearsal. But we have had such lovely support and a team behind us. Our main guy, Richie.
You can say it too. You can say Richie.
Yeah.
Richie. You're like whispering things.
It's good teamwork.
Just secret.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, absolutely. Our main man, Richie, he's been with us from the very beginning and he is just one in a million. He's just been more than we could ask for. Stage manager, technical director, everything.
Renaissance man.
Right.
Yeah.
And Brian, were you at the premiere night at the Copernicus Center tonight?
I did get to catch some of it. I'm actually the technical director for Fringe Festival 2.
Oh, you are?
So I was
called
away to...
Yeah.
I did... Doing work at some of the venues still.
It's a lot of work because you have
a lot of work.
How many performances are you doing tech for, or at least setting it up?
Well, I set up all the locations.
All of it.
Yeah.
So for over 200 performances.
Yep.
And do you have it? And you don't have to tell us name any names, but people come in and they got a running gun with the tech. Has it? Are some people a little more savvy when it comes to what they want, what they need?
Oh, sure. Yeah. There's a lot of different experience levels and, like expectations of what a festival provides. So, you know.
Right.
There should be a class in any BFA that teaches you just the basics of how to communicate what you need for your piece, what you need for your art, tech wise, because you don't have to know, like, obviously we all master our own crafts, but handing that cue sheet, being able to say, I know we have 30 minutes, so here's what we want to do. Here's all the beats. Let's just go cue to cue. Like, if you don't understand those terms and you can't at least speak a basic part of that language, I don't think you've gotten a full theater education. Mm-hmm. And I can speak from experience of like, oh, okay, so you have like some of it on a CD and you want me to pull up two YouTube clips too? Great. No, that's fine.
And that's what NIU does on their first year, so I totally
Awesome. Yeah. That's so cool.
You get to stay close to the microphone if you want to. There you go, Nico. Thank you. Yeah, I saw a show at Sketchfest when the tech imploded because one of the performers got sick. And so that was the person that was running all the computer.
Oh, no.
They handled it very well because seasoned performers can also run with that.
Yeah, you embrace that at that point.
Yeah, you have to embrace it at that point. So for over 200 performances, you were setting up the tech. Tell me what the easiest one was. Can you give me what group that was? And you can say Penny if you want, because they're in the room.
We're
I'm just saying.
A pain.
I mean, the easiest one was probably mine because
they knew
not to ask me for certain things. So I was sort of prepping them along the way.
Sure. Yeah. Did you have any that was extraordinarily hard, like people with overblown expectations of what you could do for them? it looks like it might have been Penny.
Yeah, you can say us too.
How many lasers do you have? Yeah.
I think people are pretty accepting of once they get in the space of what's not just going to work or, what sort of lighting things that we can provide. So once you show them what they have, everyone's been pretty accepting and happy to roll with it.
Well, this is such a fun festival. I think that you're right. I think that people come knowing once you get there, okay, it's almost like a camp for performers, isn't it?
Yeah, I love that you say that though, because I've met a bunch of the Fringe staff and they say the same exact thing. It's like their last summer camp before going off to the real world again.
Yeah, exactly. Well, what a great thing to have in the city of Chicago, but again, in my neighborhood. I love that the Chicago Fringe Festival is up there in Jefferson Park. You know, grab some dinner, maybe at the Gale Street Inn. I'm not saying you have to, but there's a lot of other good restaurants. Actually, George Carson and I were talking about my mother's secret recipe. I have to look for the restaurant. There's a Mexican restaurant on Milwaukee Avenue, and I love that restaurant as well. There's a great tapas restaurant in Jefferson Park. So go ahead and grab something to eat, grab a cocktail or not, and go see some performances all over the Jefferson Park area. Go to chicagofringe.org to find out more about the schedule. And again, what do you want people to know about the performance that you guys are doing for Penny?
I would say come in and just be open to letting your imagination go wild.
There
because
you go.
That's the main thing with Penny. It's just inspiring the imagination and making you feel like a child again.
And Nico?
Yeah, just capturing the creativity that we had as children and, just having fun.
All available at Chicago Fringe. Brian, any last words before we go?
I don't think so.
We will see you at Fringe and check out all of the shows, Penny and Metropolis Triptych, and chicagofringe.org for their shows. You're listening pretty late. It's Wednesday night. I'm sticking with it's Wednesday night. I know we have that philosophical discussion all the time about whether it's tonight or tomorrow morning. It's tonight because we haven't gone to bed.
Yes.
We haven't gotten back up.
Our paths are our own.
Although right now, I think it's Saturday for Esmeralda. No, what day is it?
I honestly couldn't remember what day it was.
I've lost track.
I was coming into work and I'm like, is it Wednesday or Thursday?
I took the month off the show, and the show is clearly the only thing that anchored my sense of time.
Oh, really?
Because my other two jobs I can kind of do whenever I want, the carpentry over hires and Ubering, and so if Google doesn't tell me, I have no clue what day it is.
I don't, because my phone, like if I look at my phone, all I know is what time it is. And sometimes it's military time. I don't know what happens on my phone that I accidentally hit something and it goes to military time and then I'm all messed up.
It makes sense, but you always have to count.
Yeah, to subtract 12.
Yeah, wait. No, I can't play anymore.
No. I would never know what time it was. I'd just be like, no, it's daytime, I think.
That's kind of what's fun is that my phone is telling me what time it is. I don't know what it means. So
I put my phone in Spanish for a couple months. Like, I'm going to force myself to increase my vocabulary. But there's a lot of words about, you know, like technical stuff on your phone. Like,
right.
That was like, well, no, never mind.
I speak Spanish and I had to fix my mom's phone this weekend, and I had to change it to English because I was like, I don't know what half of these words are.
Yeah, once you go like more than four syllables, like that vocab is beyond me. Like, I can conjugate it, but I can't tell you what it means.
Yeah, I can't conjugate. That was a thing that always held me up in Spanish, was conjugating a verb.
Oh, I love it. It's such the system makes so much more sense to me.
The Spanish does?
Mm-hmm.
And why are you trying to learn Spanish?
I feel like I've learned enough.
They're going to kick us all out, remember?
Yeah.
So you probably don't want to learn.
Or we're going to let them all stay.
Yeah.
And then we also need to learn Spanish.
Well, you should just learn it anyway. It's like super great for your brain, and a lot of our population speaks it. So,
do you feel confident singing in Spanish?
Ay si volvieras a mí. A little bit.
Esmeralda and I were pleased.
It's very good.
I'm pretty sure it means if only you wouldn't leave me, right? Something? If you would. Oh, well, I'm singing
come
to
back,
the wrong people then.
If you would like come back. Salir would be to leave, right?
Well, I think you would say ir.
Ir, yeah.
Go.
Go. You go.
or leave would be deja. Dejas.
See?
Me dejas. See? If you leave me.
Yeah, I can't. My Spanish has dissolved completely. It's all gone.
Yeah. And the only words I really need are más despacio or más lento, which means, like, either way, like, hey, can you slow down and say that again, like, real slow?
You know what? A lot of my audience says más despacio. They don't even know they're saying it.
Let me ask, like, so that's an interesting question. So we were at the late night taco burrito that's next to my house. And, you know, everybody there predominantly speaks Spanish. And so I always try to order in Spanish. You know what I mean? Like, is that... how is that viewed? Because I know some people are like, oh, yeah, that's awesome. And some people are like, don't you think they're mad that you're trying? Because I can guarantee you I don't sound like I sound right now.
I think the server feels the exact same way. Everyone's going to be different. Some people are going to think it's great, and some people are going to be annoyed. And what they think is none of your business. You do you.
For the most part, I think it's appreciated.
I think so, too.
My mom, she gets a giggle when people try to speak Spanish to her.
Okay, well, my life is all about spreading giggles, so I'm down.
At the very least, you're giving giggles.
And I'm not in Texas anymore, so I in the circles I travel, I don't get to practice it as much. So if you lose it if you don't practice it, and I think it's a super awesome skill.
I haven't used it in a long time.
You speak to me, Brandon.
Okay.
We'll just speak Spanish right on.
Yeah, vamos a llamarte más tarde en esta noche, así podemos hablar más. Yo puedo ayudar? No, to learn. What is learn? Ayudar is to help. Comprar? No, that's to buy.
Aprender.
Ah, es muy cerca de ayudar.
No.
Tú puedes ver cómo es. No razón. Está bien.
There you go. Some people are driving off
giggles.
The road right now.
I just spread giggles. Yes.
It's good, though. No, you're learning. You're learning. It's very good.
No puedo.
Más o menos.
Si se puede. I wanted to talk a little bit about an article that we came across today. My boss, actually, Stephanie, sent this because, you know, we do get into arguments. I try not to get into arguments on social media. I don't engage if somebody posts something, especially if it's an attack. In this political season, people seem very eager to try to go after somebody. You're not going to change someone's mind. We talked about this the last hour. Brandon was saying, you know, people have already kind of staked out their territory. But the other thing is that we identify so much our system of beliefs with what our affiliation is. Like, somehow if you say never Trump, somebody takes that as a personal attack, and that's, we're not separating that anymore. So I think that it is smart to realize that you shouldn't try to win the argument. That's what's going to make yourself crazy, don't you think?
Absolutely. I think you shouldn't let the argument sit with you beyond the argument. You know what I mean?
That's
like
the
anger
thing.
Is the acid that eats the vial in which it's contained. Like, it's one of my favorite phrases. And it's very true. I think if you shut down the dialogue, don't we lose the ability to communicate? And don't we just go farther down that road?
Well, and that's Joe called earlier to just point something out. But Joe and I can have a conversation, even though we disagree on so many things. And you have to keep the lines of communication open. I think when you have something like Facebook and you can go at each other and it's somewhat anonymous, and yet you do maybe know each other in social circles, and then you see each other, like, what is that going to look like? You know, can you make eye contact with each other when you call each other names, or, you know, sort of been degrading to each other on Facebook?
Well, the internet is safe. You know what I mean? You don't have to look the person in the eye that you're calling these names or talking to so angrily. It's incredibly entitling, and it's outweighed. The amazing spread of information, I feel, is often outweighed by that it's safe to be the bad parts of you, because no one's, right. What are they going to do? You know what I mean? It's just what's words on a screen. You're thousands of miles away.
But don't you feel better when you just walk away from something you don't agree with? That way you're protecting your own beliefs, right? Putting your beliefs out there doesn't make them stronger beliefs. It sort of opens you up to a nasty conversation with somebody who is so dedicated and driven to disagree with you to the point where it becomes nasty.
But I think the word belief includes a sense of the need to spread it. You know what I mean? Like, whether it's like there's certain religions that's a huge requirement of it. You must preach your gospel of whatever religion it is. And I think belief, just in its definition, carries a little bit of that as well. If you're not doing justice to what you truly believe, if you're not sharing it. But sharing your beliefs and being open-minded at the same time is possible.
Right. It is. Right.
And I think there's not a lot of that.
But if you feel yourself, I would say this, Esmeralda, because I know that you have launched into things with people, and not really, have you gone back and forth? Or is it more that you put something out there and then let people sort of drop whatever ideas they have on your page?
I've put things out there, and then I've also, anytime I've responded on, like, I'll see a news thing or I'll see something, I usually respond to the ones where they're completely just, like, off course, where I'm like, right. This doesn't even, like, yeah. It's this and this, because to try to change someone's mind, you just can't for the most part.
I generally just, I don't even say, there are some folks that have put together this article, this essay about what you can do to maybe diffuse it or just walk away. And perhaps you can type something like, I continue to disagree with you, but I'd prefer not to fight about it. Right. You know, so to let them know that you see what they're saying, you don't agree with it, but I'm not going to have this argument anymore. I would just close the tab.
You have to protect yourself from negative forces in the world.
That also sounds so infuriating to me.
It is a little condescending. And I disagree with you completely.
And we're done now. And I'm like, no, but I'm not done.
Well, I think that's the other side of it is if you can't tie, it's not like watching a baseball game where if your team wins, you feel good. And if your team loses, you feel bad. And there's a chance for both. Mm-hmm. I think if you need to go in, not assuming anything from anyone other than yourself, or not expecting anything from anyone, because I absolutely, if you're like, well, how can you just not see the logical point that I am making? You know what I mean? Like, that's awful. But as long as you can keep cool and you cannot let it affect yourself, that's the only choice you can make. I don't think we should stop talking about it altogether. I just think we should have educated, peaceful conversations, which is, you know, I also think I should have $1 million. So
do you think, and here's another suggestion, is if you're trapped at a dinner or another setting where you can't get away from the person, and you know, like, let's say you're at a table and, you know, a wedding or something, and now this, you know, you could get up, I guess, and just go to the bar.
Yeah. Okay. Awkward situation where leaving is awkward.
Yes,
okay.
Exactly. So here's a solution that they have. You can refocus a conversation on the person's feelings and ask them endless questions about their beliefs.
Oh, forget it. I would just leave. I don't care how awkward.
So how does one change, how do minds change? You know what I mean? Like, you don't drive by a billboard and read it and go, oh, you know what? I've been wrong about my politics all along. Like, you obviously, any sort of heated conversation or argument doesn't change things. Right. Facebook posts and comments, good Lord, don't change things.
Nope.
So are we all just stuck the way we are?
No, I think that there are moments. I think that some people have been, either have been driven away from a political party on either side, the Democrats or Republicans this year. I think there have been moments that have sort of, people have gotten either a light bulb or, hey, this isn't the direction I want to go in.
Right.
Whether it's the Democrats or the Republicans.
I think it takes a giant life change. You know what I mean? I was raised, and will say, up until my early 20s, hardcore staunch Republican. I like to think that not so much on the social issues, but and that's just the political environment I was raised in. You're not exposed to anything else. And then I come up here, and over the course of 5 or 6 years, I was indirectly exposed to the other side and the other opinion without all the hate, like, over it, which both sides have. But no one was holding me down going like, this is what, you know, we need big government and title programs and you should treat women better. Like, it was just like, oh, these people, whether they're Republican or Democrat or whatever, are leading by example. And I've now had the benefit of living in two worlds, both of which are very one-sided. And I see it on both sides. I see ignorance back home.
Oh, no
and I
doubt.
See ignorance here because they don't ever, they don't see anything about what the conservatives want to do other than, you know, just completely keep their social rights down. And that's a real damn shame that all that stuff is tied to it. But it doesn't change the fact that everyone's just covering their ears and going, no, I'm right. No, I can't hear you.
Yes, I agree. So here's another thing. What if their answers make clear that the sources of their facts are to you wrong, right? Let's say you ask them a lot of questions like, it sounds as though you're really worried about terrorism or really upset about immigration, right? So you keep asking someone questions mm-hmm. to sort of have that dialogue, maybe articulating it. Maybe that it forces them to hear themselves out, I guess.
Who has ever gone, oh, I am wrong.
I am wrong. No one's ever. I think you can have moments where you go, hey, I hadn't thought of that, if you are open to a dialogue back and forth. Like, obviously, earlier when Jim started launching into Mexicans are notorious for something and then gave us a specific story, that's, to me, was sort of a moment. One, we were running out of time, but two, I was like, wow, this is, you know, then it becomes your personal story. But on the other hand, Jim had a personal experience that if I had more time, I would have liked to have heard that story.
And that shaped his opinion about things. That's very valid in its own right.
Right. So, but at the same time, I heard notorious Mexicans and then this one story, and that somehow is going to label them. But I didn't have the time to listen to the rest of it. That's just a matter of the way the show goes. But, you know, what if, you know, if you know that someone's wrong, right?
Like, factually, like, we're talking about, like, well, how many people live in this town? There is an answer.
Right,
and
exactly.
And there can be a wrong answer. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Do you think it's useful to tell? I do. I try to, like, come back with the knowledge that I have that are specific.
What do you get out of being the conversation babysitter? What do you get out of informing this person? Is it a sense of, like, righteous, like, damn,
right.
I was right about it. Aha! You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Or do you walk away selflessly feeling good about having informed someone about something? Like, if I just mean, like, I'm not disagreeing, and I completely know and love that
absolutely.
Feeling.
Right.
But that's probably a bad motivation. And probably having bad motivations like that are what indirectly stem into this, like, oh, no one's really talking about anything. We're just kind of yelling our points.
Oh, exactly.
See, but I'm also thinking it's like little kids who think, you can get pregnant from kissing. It's like, no, guys.
Yes.
That's not how that works.
Yeah, but they're
Let
not going to be super angry at you when they find out that it's not. In fact,
well,
I'm,
I mean,
you know, I'm like, oh, cool, then I don't have to worry about it anymore.
Well, the trick is to get them to believe you, right? Is
yeah.
to get a kid to believe you that believes that kind of thing, or another adult who so strictly believes something and they're not going to walk over. They're not going to.
I mean, that's kind of a trust thing, though, right? So if I trust you as a human, if I'm probably going to be more prone to listen to your point of view than the person on Facebook, which I don't know and therefore don't trust at all.
Right.
I think that you shut down a lot quicker. That kid probably trusts you because they're your kid. You know what I mean? And
what if they say, nuh-uh?
Well,
yeah, I'm thinking of strange, like, just kids.
Stranger
that
kids?
Are saying
Why are
this?
You telling stranger kids about sex ed?
Well, if they're saying things that I would be like, no, kid, that's no, sorry.
Completely wrong.
I don't know who told you that.
Well,
no.
We all lied to them about Santa and the Easter Bunny, and that, like, that's like, those are huge lies. Those are like earth shattering things. And you know what I mean? It's very odd to me that that's a very normal thing to do, is to lie to your kids about things like Santa Claus. I get like, oh, but the
what?
Magic.
Wait, what? What are you talking about?
I moved on to kids not trusting us. Like,
what are you saying? Here's the most important thing, I think, in this article about don't try to win the argument. Whatever you do, avoid being negative. I think that's something we can all strive for.
Certainly.
In everything.
It only hurts yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Life is too short to be negative and harbor things. And it's weird. It's weird what irks you and stays with you. That guy that cuts you off or something. And
right.
you're just like, what? Why do I care?
Mm-hmm.
But it does. And I think it's whether it's meditation or religion or just self-reflection, whatever your thing is.
Just
I think you got to. What I like to do is enjoy other people being angry. Like, if you get right behind me,
mm-hmm.
and I mean, I don't do the left lane thing because there's like, that's what traffic is. But anyway, if you get right behind me and you're honking, you're screaming, I will lose 7 or 8 miles an hour. You know what I mean? And and I'm just like, well, yeah, there's just no point to that. And you know what? Maybe that's me in my own form of like, see, I'm right. That's my argument. So something I need to work on. But at least I'm happy and not sad.
Yeah. Well, that's the sort of silent but deadly sort of moment. Where you're like,
kindness,
I'm not engaged in this enough to be hostile or outwardly angry. I'm not. I don't care enough except to just sort of you know, coast and let you be angry.
And nothing will anger them more.
Mm-hmm. So, but that's the thing is, if you refuse to be negative back, you know, it stops the escalation, right? By slowing down, you might escalate him, but at the same time, you haven't done it yourself.
And you need to be prepared with your own out. You know what I mean? Like, you know what? This is actually, this is where I stop. I don't think we're getting anywhere. I respect you. I just personally need to go right now because I can feel my number starting to tick down.
Exactly.
And if it gets to one, we're no longer having an amicable conversation.
The quieter I get, the more dangerous it might be. Mm-hmm. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. Live in the Allstate Showcase Studio, I'm joined by Brandon C. Price, the CEO and mastermind behind Vamp, a music comedy and drinking show every Friday and Saturday night at 10:30 at MCL. Did I get it?
It's perfect. You've got it down at this point.
Go to vampchicago.com for ticket information. And in the last few weeks, we have decided not to talk about Donald Trump except on Wednesday nights, and we already had our window from midnight to 12:30. But while I was getting ready today, I saw he changed up his campaign and hired some new people, some consultants, and one of them is what's her name, Kelly Ann. She's a she's a little bit like Ann Coulter ish. You know, a little. I don't know if that paints enough of a picture.
It
for
does.
You.
It does, and the physicality you just added really painted.
I don't know how to describe that, but in a panel discussion on PBS a few years ago, they were talking about rape in the military, and she had something interesting to say. Craig, do we have that clip of Kellyanne? What's her, Crawley?
We should not have the girls' version and the boys' version of that physical fitness test. I want the best prepared military, regardless of gender. But I'll tell you, if physical fitness, if we were physiologically, not mentally, emotionally, professionally equal to men, if we were physiologically as strong as men, rape would not exist. You would be able to defend yourself and fight him off. And
also, well, I don't know why we need to go to that comparison, but I would say
I'm going to go with that woman. I don't know why we need to go to that comparison. See, Esmeralda, okay, here's how we're going to test for... I don't mean to laugh because, by the way, the incidence of rape is tragic in the military and anywhere. But the absurdity of what she said is what's galling to me. Hi, Esmeralda.
I just never understand why is it... I saw something earlier. It was, you know, schools, colleges are like, you know, how to
not
fend
be raped.
Off people or how not to be raped. It's like, how about we teach these people who, you know, rape.
You see these court cases like this recent one where they just get, oh, well, we don't want to ruin this kid's future. So just 2 years probation like that. That's the biggest problem because, I mean, there's one point to the criminal justice system, and that is to deter action by punishing. And when it doesn't happen, you feed into this culture, and it's I think you have to start there at like holding everybody accountable the same, and whether you're rich and white or poor and black and whatever, like you should probably go to jail forever if you rape someone,
right?
Shot in the dark on that. But so let me play devil's advocate to this point though, because like you know you talk about how you know as a woman in the city you know I have a lot of friends, my two roommates, my girlfriend, they you know it you there are certain areas you can't go, there's certain areas at certain times you don't want to walk, train stops you don't want to get off of, and I can only listen and sympathize and hate that for you. I don't experience that as I'm over 6 foot tall. I'm not, and by any means, like dominating and like, you know, like instilling fear in people that see me, but I do not worry about being overpowered. You know, it would be, you know what I mean?
Like, you're able to walk confidently by yourself at night.
Right. And I'm way stronger than my roommates, like just physically way stronger. So is there not a point to, well, if we were all equally as strong, you know, that makes sense for why we would draft equally and across the board. That makes sense why we would have presidential fitness situations where everybody had the same, like we both have to do 80 pull-ups or whatever.
Right.
Like what she said and the way she said it was extraordinarily abrasive and not intelligently worded, in my opinion. But would it not? I mean, like, you know what I mean? Like, if somebody who's as equally as strong as I am
We're talking about the military? Or are we talking about in life in general?
I would say both.
Okay.
But if you and I are the same strength physically-ish, and you come at me, I've got a way better chance of not being, you know, attacked or assaulted or whatever solely because I can physically, like, fight
overpower.
Back. Now, if you've got, you know, a deadly weapon, if those kind of things, there's more than one person. Obviously, that's all terrible. Rape is terrible. Don't do that. But is there not a point to, like, well, yes, if we were all, like, in a magic world where we're all physically equal.
Yeah, but that's the thing of, like, the guy who wants to rape me, is he going to be like, hey, how much do you weigh and how much can you bench press? No? Okay, then. Well, I'll go to the next one. It's like,
it's a moot point because that's not the way that it is. You know what I mean? Like, that's evolution. Why bring it up?
Rape would not exist if people didn't want to rape people. I mean, and the people that want to do that, want to attack somebody, yes, they're going to take on somebody it happens because someone overpowers them for whatever reason, right?
Yeah, you're looking for the person you could take, physically.
In any situation, it's not only women who get raped. Men get raped as well. And in the military, there are a lot of cases of it. And so, you know, rape doesn't exist because men are stronger. Rape exists because someone wants to rape somebody.
No,
wants to have power over them.
I don't disagree. And rape doesn't, she's wrong. Rape doesn't go away if we're all equally strong. But I feel, I think that's just a cop out of having the conversation. Of like, because that's it's way tougher to deal with the mental aspect of, oh my God, there are people that want to rape people, whether that's mental illness or anger or just whatever. Like, that's way harder conversation than to play metaphor, like magical hypothetical land where everybody's the same strong and we all have all the sex parts and we're all just equal in this utopia. That's okay, fun to say, and now we're moving on. Like, you're not addressing the issue. You're not actually talking about real problems and real solutions. So that's pointless. Let's work in the world that we live in.
Right. Well, and the thing with the conversation that they were having was about their physical strength and how, you know, how female soldiers do in comparison to men. It's so very late. This is something we could talk about later, but we have so many other things to discuss.
I'm following you.
Yeah. No. And I'm sure we'll talk about this again because there is actually legislation that is trying to grapple with the incidence of rape and how it's, you know, especially the backlash that people who step forward and say that they've been attacked in the military is reprehensible, and there needs to be something done. And there is legislation that's been held up by Democrats and Republicans, and that needs to change. So I think that as much as this is an interesting and salacious way to talk about Donald Trump's campaign manager, I think it's a much bigger conversation, and we will, you know, continue to discuss both, you know, when it comes to gender in the military, when it comes to on campus attacks, and the social. I mean, just the justice system. This, you know, the swimmer in California was just released yesterday, so there are so many conversations that continue to need to happen. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio, joined by Brandon C. Price. And I just went school supply shopping with Griffin earlier in the week. Esmeralda, we picked the worst day to go. We went on Sunday. You know, so it's kind of a crossover of like some of the suburban schools. A lot of them have gone back. And then Chicago Public Schools start this coming Tuesday. And Target had a 10% discount on everything. So it was,
oh my gosh,
I don't know why we went on Sunday. It was a madhouse. I would have gladly have let them keep their 10%.
Oh, you should have told me and I would have gone for you.
What about online? Or is it part of it? Is it fun for Griffin, though?
No, it wasn't fun for anybody.
Really? Yeah. So you got
to
go online, right?
I love back to school shopping.
So did I. I mean, it was just the whole
new
world
pencils.
Of possibilities. Oh,
man, it has been 16 years since I even could relate to what that feels like.
I still want to buy some, and I'd just be like, I don't know what I would do with it.
I showed up to high school every day asking for a pencil.
No, you buy all that stuff and it disappears. Although he has been really good from the very beginning since kindergarten of keeping track of all the stuff that he buys. And I know that because I have all of it in my house. Like I'm like, can we get rid of this? I have him go through his papers and all of his quizzes and artwork and everything. And we have a conversation. Some of it just kind of disappears. And if he doesn't notice that it's gone, so be it. But yes, I was standing there and he, you know, they give you a list. And here's one of the things. I stood in front of Griffin and Steve in Target and I said, can we stop for a moment? because they were, you know, we need all this and this. I'm like, we have colored pencils at home. Mm-hmm. We have glue sticks. I know we have glue sticks that you didn't use last year. And every year they're on this kick to go buy everything new again. And I think they spent the calculator that Griffin needed for class was a $100 calculator.
Like the TI 83 plus or whatever. I'm sure it's well beyond that number now, but yeah.
Yeah. I was.
What grade is he in?
He's going into seventh grade, but it's high school. He's in an academic center. So he's starting high school.
That's big algebra and what I mean. I'm not going to pretend to know what that calculator does.
And the school fees are $400 on top of the school supplies, right? So he's bringing a lot. But what I stood in front of them, I said, look, can we stop for a minute? You have gotten these shopping lists every year since you were a kindergartner. Nobody goes through and checks and makes sure you got, like, you know, because kindergarten was a whole different thing. It was like paper towel rolls and antibacterial wipes, and because, you know, they're all still snot-nosed, right, and run, and all kinds of cleaning supplies that we had to bring in. But nobody ever said, hey, you know, if we miss something, nobody ever called us on it and said, you didn't have the right highlighters.
But then you don't have the right ones.
Because everybody else
does. That
does
not sound like a valid physical argument.
I would always, I was the same way, though. I was like, I need everything from this list. I still do that with, like, if I have to cook something.
Oh.
I'm like, no, I need the parsley. I need this kind
the
of parsley.
Can I tell you, sometimes substituting is just fine, Esmeralda.
No.
There's a great recipe for mustard greens and leeks, and I didn't have mustard greens. Guess what I had? I had kale, because that's how I do. And it's great. It's my family's favorite kale recipe, is my kale and leeks. It's a little bit of, you saute a little bit of butter and some garlic right there in the pan. You throw in your leeks and let them, you braise them till they're a little bit caramelized, and you throw in your kale with a little bit of chicken stock.
How do you know if that mustard green makes that dish?
Sometimes you just have to live on the edge.
No.
So good.
You only live once, Esmeralda. Try everything.
So very, very. I made London broil on, speaking of going off the charts, off the rails, I made London broil. It was terrible.
Why?
I've never made London broil before.
Oh, no, you got to look these things up. I do full research if I.
I didn't. Well, it was
a new piece of meat or something.
Yeah, I think that it was the cut of meat that I picked. But
no,
I,
you can. You just gotta work. You just gotta Google. Do a little Google search.
No,
America's
there's
Test Kitchen.
There's a skill to cooking, though, that I have to imagine there is, because I just don't possess it. And I can memorize a song or lines, but like recipes and understanding, like, I don't know. It's like a different language, and I think it's beyond just the simple Google. And I'm somebody who Googles everything.
No, but
everything.
You can't, like, say like that London broil. It's just there's certain ways to cook it so it'll be softer. And you just have to know which way. That's all.
Oops.
And if you Google it, Google will be like, yeah, London broil is best this way. And you go, oh, cool. Yeah. I'll do it that way then.
Do you know how it was so discouraging? Because it says, like, I think it's 135 to 145 internal temperature, because London broil is a little bit rare. It's supposed to be pretty rare in the middle, mm-hmm, and juicy. And so I did, and it was like 110. I'm like, okay, a little bit longer. And there's nothing sadder than going and seeing it's up to 165.
Yep.
Oh, no. Yeah.
You gotta, that extra 2 minutes you gave it ruined it.
Yeah.
You got to get yourself one
I
of
just,
those thermometers.
I just don't screw around.
I did add a thermometer. Like the
kind that, and then you can leave it in.
Oh, I should have left it
in. Yeah, those are the best. Mm-mm. You can put it in the oven, and then an alarm can even go off.
I Ooh. Buy food that you can just grab and eat. Requires no preparation. That is how
I
live.
You could technically just rip into the London broil raw.
Oh.
You can eat raw beef, right?
I will say this. Yeah, sure, if you want to have all the whatever bad things
steak
come from
tartare.
That.
Steak tartare.
Yeah, I think it's chicken that gets you.
I will say my side dishes were all spectacular. My leeks and kale. And I made red honey roasted potatoes, which were very good. And red onion marmalade for the London broil. So the rest of that was fine.
Everybody just eat around.
Everyone eat around
understand.
Your meat.
You're listing these ingredients in these things, and I think, well, a potato, how do you eat that? You know, like,
I made
it
was with honey and dried mustard, a little bit, and drizzled that over the
right. But you can't just
oil.
Like eat a potato like an apple. Therefore, it is off my shopping list.
Off your shopping list. All right. Again, I wanted to talk a little bit about school supplies. But one of the things that came up as we were getting ready for this school year, a friend of mine on Facebook is a teacher. She teaches children with disabilities, and she wasn't posting for herself though. She was posting for another teacher who they had cut the funding for at their school, and she was telling the she was basically pleading for her students, for people to donate money in order to buy the supplies she needed for projects that she does every year to start the school year off. I donated, and a lot of people as well online, she got the funds that she was looking for. And after I donated, I was glad to get her across the finish line. But at the same time, I was like, this is exactly what some of our legislators in Illinois want to have happen, which is, look, you know, if we look, we cut some funding and they were able to compensate. They took care of that spending.
Yeah, just rely on crowdsourcing, because why would we help you at all?
Right. And education is so underfunded, and it's the disparity between the schools that are successful and communities where children are already at a higher level, you know, whether it's socially, economically, and then neighborhoods, like, you know, we were talking to Rashada Dewan, and there are kids that are struggling in Roseland and in Austin, and imagine how much the teachers are struggling if they're also at a disadvantage when it comes to their own salaries.
Well, if you're going to donate $100 to this, like, you care, you see it online, you're like, okay, I'm going to donate whatever, $100. I personally, because that, now you've relied on me doing that, and now you're going to rely on me doing it every year. Raise my taxes by $2 a month.
But not everybody wants to pay for it. Like, listen to Jim earlier talking about different things. Why do I got to pay? That's what a lot of people say about different things.
How people cannot know that education is the most important part of any of this. Whether you think it's defense spending, entitlements, health care, campaign finance, I don't care what issue you think is the most important one. The reason people are voting against what you know to be right is probably because they are uneducated.
Right.
And I forget what staggeringly low percentage of our gross national budget or whatever goes to education, but it is so freakishly low. And you almost have to think, as a cynic, is that a purposeful thing? Because the less educated, the less, you know, fight back,
right,
if you will. You know what I mean? So don't – I hate the fact that now these schools have to ask. Like, please just – well, at least keep the doors open and donate some paper. Yeah, we fired all the arts teachers and all the after-school programs,
right,
that kept kids out of trouble and all that. That's gone. There's nothing we can do about it. There's no way we could ask you for that money through a legal system. But can you guys just please go fund me so this kid can have a pencil? I mean, if that's where we're at, like – how is that not one of the biggest issues on the table for everybody?
I know, because now teachers are allowed to deduct up to $250 of unreimbursed supplies in their classroom. But most teachers end up spending out of pocket $800, $1,000,
absolutely,
another $500.
$250 does nothing.
No.
That's nuts.
Yeah, it's crazy. And so, but, you know, I would encourage, you know, everyone, if you have the opportunity to help out for this new school year. By the way, we're going to have Senator Dan Katowski on tomorrow with ChildServe, and they are still collecting backpacks for kids who are getting a new start in life. A lot of them are living in foster homes, they're living in group homes. And one of the greatest things, as we were talking about, Esmeralda was talking about how exciting it is to have all these new school supplies. So if you're interested, go to childserve.org and help some kids who really need your help. ChildServe, leave the E off because their work is not done.
So here's a question. So you know how people are a lot more inclined to donate to things when there's a face and when there's a reason? You're not donating to the library. You're donating to buy the library a new globe or whatever. So, and you know, you get the TV advertisements for like the starving kids over in whatever country. Hey, this is your kid. You get a picture and you get to communicate. You know what I mean? Like, I wish there was a way that tax dollars could do that. Like, show me transparency. Show me exactly what I'm paying for when I give you my tax dollar.
I've thought of that before.
You know what I mean?
What
put
is
a
it?
Name on it.
Well, because people say, why do I got to pay for it, right?
Absolutely.
But
you're
just going into
for
the pot.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're just going into the big federal, local, state pot. I think,
right.
Yeah. You know how expensive it would be to break it down to have that tax guy?
I mean, would it?
And would they tell us the truth?
Well, I mean, but that's the thing. If again, it's back to freedom of the press. If that knowledge is open and public, then now we can hold people accountable.
You want to follow? No, you want to follow your dollar? I want to follow my dollar.
I have no idea what my taxes do. You know what I mean? I mean, I get it. I hear all the time, well, it does this and this and this and this. But what percentage of each dollar that I give is going to the things that I want and I care about, and I would vote on a person to represent me to get that done? Like, I feel like, well, I answered my own question. That's why they don't tell us. There we go. Problem solved.
I don't know. There's got to be someone we can ask about the percentages of what every single dollar.
Somebody
goes.
Knows, and so, I'm sure they're paid tax dollars to shut up.
They're not telling us.
You know
what? Aren't they telling us, Brandon?
I feel like that's a thing we could ask for, like, legally.
like a, you know what I mean? We got lawyer freedom friends. Of information.
We got lawyer friends on this show.
We do have lawyer friends. Should we? Oh, you know what? Let's call. We'll call Representative Robert Martwick for our wake up call. He's a lawyer and a legislator. Yeah. Well, and I have questions for him too because I know we won't get him on the phone, but there's a legislator and an alderman who want to have bullets. Serial, like the serial numbers on every bullet, so that since we can't track guns,
expensive.
Let's track bullets. Well, but is it expensive for the bullet makers and for the people who buy the bullets? I don't have any problem.
No,
with
just in general, I'd say it's expensive. Also, like ballistics, like if a bullet hits a concrete wall or like it's 22 shell and just bounces around and just gets absolutely obliterated.
Yeah, how are you gonna get a number off of that?
Yeah, it sounds very expensive to even get the number off of.
Right.
I don't know. Hey, I applaud anybody for taking any shot. No pun intended. Of stopping gun violence. I want to ask him about the tree that fell on my car. Do I talk to my alderman about that? Yeah, ask Martwick.
I don't have John Arena's number because he's an alderman. He might know something about
that. Oh, man. Someone should have to pay.
Well, we'll
put it isn't me.
We'll put it on the voicemail when we call Representative Martwick when we come back. I'm pretty late with Patty Basket, 720 WGN. Wake me up before you go, go. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, and we are hitting the home stretch. Every night, we call up a friend of the show, and sometimes not. We called Judy Tenuta last week for our Pretty Late last call, and she answered. Ooh, that's a... I was playing Rashada Dewan's video, which is
can't
available.
Stop listening.
I know. She's fantastic. Whoa, there she is singing again.
Your phone really wants us to hear it.
And right now we are calling Representative Robert Martwick, good friend of the show. What we do here is if we're fortunate enough and they answer the phone, we have a conversation. If not, we're also fortunate to just leave a voicemail for them, which is kind of fun too.
It's fun.
We catch them up on the show. We have questions.
Belonging to
Rob
Martwick.
Hi, Rob.
And cannot.
Oh, he knew it was coming.
So many phone calls.
What kind of representative leaves his voicemail full?
And I have no way to get another number to Craig. Let me see if I can forward you. Senator. You want a representative from the from Chicago? Do you have Representative Feigenholz's number by any chance? Sarah Feigenholz might be able to. I don't think you live in her district.
No, I actually looked it up. It was really cool. I mean, you know me, I'm registered in Texas, but I'm starting to think I don't want to be anymore because I do live here permanently now. Unless you're a cop, then I'm just visiting. constantly visiting for 5 years. It's a really great town. But I know I looked it up. I was really proud of myself.
Oh, that's very cool. Who is it then?
I'm looking it up again. I haven't saved my phone now.
I'm excited. I haven't talked to Sarah Feigenholz in a while. There's a. I always feel like Lily Tomlin. One ringy dingy. Two ringy dingies. Next caller. I love Sarah Feigenholz. She's been doing a lot of great work with getting information.
Hello,
Representative Feigenholz. You weren't supposed to answer the phone. I've woken you up, haven't I? It's Patty Vasquez from WGN Radio.
No, I had to get up to answer the phone anyway.
Why are we going to answer the phone? What are you doing up so
it's
late?
Ringing.
I woke you up, didn't I?
I just knew it was you.
Hi, Representative Feigenholz. How have you been?
I got up. I went to the bathroom. I put all my makeup on. And I said in a few minutes, Patty Vasquez is calling. I better look good.
You look fantastic. You sound even better.
Oh, this is radio.
How have you been? Congratulations, first of all, on all the work that you've done with adoption and making sure that people have the information that they need and all the work. Tell us a little bit about what you've been up to, if you don't mind, in your waking moments.
Well, we had actually the National Conference of State Legislatures, which is a large kind of information bank and think tank of policy ideas for legislatures around the country. Their convention was in Chicago this year, their big, big gathering. And they permitted and invited us to put together a panel of experts who've passed birth certificate access laws in their state to speak. It's the first time in the history of NCSL that they've permitted it, because up until now they thought it was controversial. So we spent a lot of time assembling a panel of legislators, and they explained how they passed this law in their states and why. And all of them were very, very conservative Republicans. So I think that we've really turned a corner on this issue. And I thank you for bringing it up.
Of course.
In the midst of all of that, you're going to talk about what happened to me, where the three sisters that I...
Yes.
Oh, my gosh, right. So, yes. you can tell that story.
No, you can tell your story. Well, you were downtown, and I was so sad that I couldn't meet your sisters. That because you were adopted.
I was.
Yes.
I was, and my birth mother and I had reunited in the late 80s.
Uh-huh.
I was in my 20s, and we had been in touch, and I knew I had sisters, and she told me all about them. She told me everything. Oh. She gave me a cornucopia of information about not only them, but my health history and my birth father, et cetera. And then, long story short, out of nowhere, I was asked by her not to contact them.
Did she just want to protect them or protect you?
You know, I'm not sure that any of us know the answer to that, but I think we will find out because we're getting together this weekend.
That is wild.
Yeah. So, you know, everything is, let's just say that everything is wonderful and that, they went back. They did fly into Chicago once we did meet. We've had this incredible weekend, and they all went back and said, guess what we did? And she was like, oh. And it turns out that it really wasn't that big of a deal after all. And long story, this is a very happy ending.
It sounds like it. And I know that because the photos you've been posting on Facebook have been very celebratory. So it's been fun to watch as well. And sort of ride along on the journey in a sort of you know, passenger way.
Fascinating. Yeah, it's fascinating for the first time in your life.
Oh. And
so deep in your life to actually look at somebody who you share DNA with for the first time.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm sure that you and Steve Cochran have had conversations about this and his experiences as well. I mean, he was reconnected with his siblings here in Chicago in such a miraculous way. And for the similar reasons, is it was wanting to know more about his past, wanting access to his records and things like that.
Well, for me, it feels like a personal human civil right, or however you want to describe it. And I think that in this day and age, you see so many states passing this law.
Yeah, and it's smart.
Unfortunately, there's more than haven't than have. And so that is something that I'm working on with Representative Williams and, you know, spending time with legislatures from other states is very important. You strategize. If they have yet to be able to pass it, you know, we're going to go to Pennsylvania. We're going to go to New York. We've got a lot of work to do. But, you know, it's hard, you know. I mean, Ann Williams lives on, you know, she's the representative west of me, but her birth certificate is in Pennsylvania.
Right.
So it's hard when you have people in your life where you have your birth certificate and they don't. And a lot of people don't realize we live in a very transient country.
Right.
That, you know, you're going to run into that situation a lot.
Exactly. And you would think at this, you know, with how far we've come technologically, that the information would be available. I have to, we only have 2 minutes left, and I have a question from our sidecar tonight, Brennan C. Price, and I don't know if you can help us with this. This is more on a local level because he lives in Chicago, and a tree fell on his car.
I'm in the 47th Ward, and I was parked on Ashland, and part of this tree died, and I came out the next in the morning, and it had fallen on my hood, and I took pictures. Is that the city's problem, or is that just sometimes life gets you?
Do you happen to know, Representative?
I think that if something happens to your property, that the city of Chicago would be my first start.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I would go. I think that there, or I certainly would talk to my insurance company.
Yeah, they're not going to help us.
you know your deductible.
Well, I mean, you know, you get liability and you just move on when
right.
you don't have collision. But maybe I do. Maybe what's the best way? Do I reach out to my alderman? Do I call somebody?
Don't you think, Representative Sarah?
I think you need to call City Hall. But I think that there's an application you may fill out or something. But
you can call 311 in Chicago, by the way, Brandon, too. They might be, although they're not often. Have you ever called 311, Representative Sarah?
Everybody calls 311 for everything.
I know.
Never heard of that.
But I would know. I would go into your alderman if you were one of the best aldermen.
Yeah.
Okay. Pawar, is that how you say his last name?
Yes. Call him. I think there's a claims department.
There you go.
All right. Well, excellent. Thank you for the information.
They may make you call your insurance company.
Well, there you go. Some place to start. Representative Sarah, thank you so much. And everyone can follow her on Twitter at Rep Sarah. And we'll hopefully have you in studio again soon.
Good to talk to you. I saw a picture of you on Facebook. It looked great.
Get some sleep, will you?
Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Bye.